Good morning, members. Welcome to the K-12 Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members, you should have the contents of your virtual packets available. And the public will also have these available to them. They are posted online. Members, if you're looking for all of these materials in one place, they're attached to the calendar event that Ms. Burt sent out for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Right now, Ms. Sunderland, will you take the roll, please?
Chair Dabney is excused. Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt.
Representative Marquardt is logging in just a moment.
Perfect. Representative Mueller. Representative Mueller. Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott is excused, but will be joining us in just a bit. Representative Zhang.
Present.
And Representative Joachim. Representative Joachim. That is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Feist, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from Thursday, March 11? And if so, would you like to move approval of those minutes?
Yes, I have, Madam Chair, and I move those minutes.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Very good. The motion or the minutes are approved. Today in committee, we have House File 1376 from Representative Frazier before us. Members, it is our intention today to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill by 11:55 today. And we will be, instead of adjourning, we will be recessing at the end of our agenda this morning. Representative Thompson, would you like to make a motion to move House File 1376 before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House File 1376 before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion into a future omnibus bill.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Thompson. Welcome, Representative Frazier. Before you introduce your bill, I understand you have an author's amendment you'd like to offer to get the bill into the shape you'd prefer. With that, I'm going to move the A21-0089 amendment to be before the committee to put the bill in the shape that Representative Frazier desires. Representative Frazier, can you briefly describe your amendment and what it does?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson, for moving the original bill in front of us. This amendment clears up an issue that we had with Minnesota State. There was concern about their 2-year residency program that they have in place that Pelsby, with the current language in the bill, would be seeking to overtake oversight of that program, and that is not the case. So we are deleting that language just to provide clarity.
Very good. Members, is there any discussion or questions regarding this A1 amendment? Okay, we will be taking a voice vote on adoption of this amendment. All in favor of adopting the A1-0089 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Very good. Representative Frazier, we now have House File 1376 as amended before us. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm happy to be here today, along with staff from Pelsby and other testifiers to present House File 1376. This bill comes 3 years after the adoption of the tier licensure system for teacher educators. During the 3 years, there has been constant engagement and analysis to determine what is working and what can be improved. This bill works to stabilize the areas that have provided clear and thoughtful pathways into the profession and propose changes to address the barriers from as small as changing Minnesota to state in a few places to promote the work of out-of-state candidates in preparation to as big as moving content and pedagogy testing barriers out of tier three requirements. I often refer to educators as nation builders. Unfortunately, our nation builders do not currently reflect the students in our classrooms. This bill seeks to help change that reality. I will not go into the details of this bill because Director of Education Policy, Dr. Yelena Bailey, and Executive Director Alex Liuzzi from Pelsby are here to do that. However, I will take a moment to highlight a few things. This bill will make over 1,000 individuals currently on a Tier 2 license qualify for a Tier 3 license, approximately 25% whom are individuals of color. Just over 1,000 individuals who are currently enrolled in preparation or have a master's degree in the content would have no change to their Tier 2 status. Additionally, I offered an amendment to this bill to ensure Tier 2 individuals of color will be able to move to a Tier 3 after 3 years of teaching. While this bill provides the support to help teachers of color meet state standards and move up the tiered system, it now ensures there are multiple pathways for teachers of color. This amendment reflects the shared investment among legislators and stakeholders in making sure Minnesota students have educators that reflect them leading the classroom. This bill includes provisions that recognize CTE teachers' unique role in our education system. While CTE teachers may still obtain a Tier 3 license through portfolio or a Tier 4 license by completing teacher prep, they are now also allowed unlimited renewals of a Tier 2 license under this bill. This language was added after hearing from CTE educators about their unique needs as educators who often work primarily in a vocational setting. I have heard these stories directly from stakeholders around the state and my role as a member of the Industrial Education and Economic Development Committee. This is just one example of how this bill works as a package to meet the various needs of Minnesota educators. I continue to hear that this bill removes a pathway that allows effectiveness in the classroom to count as a pathway to licensure. Let's be clear. That phrase, effectiveness in the classroom, is a reference to one summative evaluation from one supervisor that does not put the person on an improvement plan. This is an evaluation tool that is not consistent. That is not a consistent measure across the state, nor is it consistently applied. And this tool is not asking the question, is this an effective educator? Instead, it is a personnel tool for the district to evaluate how the teacher is performing in their assignment. A license to teach should be different, and it should be different than an administrator's evaluation. If a district wants to prepare their Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers for a professional license, they can become a teacher preparation program or help support these teachers as they seek a Tier 3 license through the portfolio process. We need to ensure that all teachers have been trained in content and pedagogy, and then let districts decide which of those teachers are effective in their settings. I believe we can all agree that a teacher who is stellar in one setting may be inadequate in another. Lastly, no one will be removed from the classroom in this bill, and many more people will be added to the classroom. Instead, this bill does more to help move individuals from Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathways, as well as including a BA exemption and other small changes to increase access to more individuals. Now, I do not believe this bill will be a panacea, but instead, it is another tool to help address and close on the worst educational disparity gaps in the country. Chair, now I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Bailey and Mr. Liuzzi to address the bill in more detail.
Very good. Members, before we do that, I just want to announce that Representative Joachim, Representative Mariani, and Representative Wolgamont have joined us. I think we will start with Alex Liuzzi. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Actually, I will defer first to Dr. Elena Bailey to do that, and then I will jump in. So first, Dr. Bailey.
Very good. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Bailey. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I should say, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for having us both here. My name is Elena Bailey, and I am the Director of Education Policy for the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. This bill is rather comprehensive and includes both larger proposals as well as smaller technical changes. Overall, the purpose of this bill is to strengthen tiered licensure, to enhance teacher preparation, accountability, and reporting, and to increase the board's capacity to carry out the duties delegated. Instead of section by section, I will provide an overview of our bill and highlight kind of key changes. So PELS is responsible for overseeing all teacher preparation programs leading to licensure in Minnesota, as well as the licensure of teachers, substitutes, and related service providers. This includes overseeing licensure renewal and compliance, as well as reviewing ethics complaints. This work is done by PELSBY's mighty staff of 22. The board itself is currently comprised of 11 volunteer members who rigorously carry out their duties through board and committee work. PELSBY proposes adding two teacher members to the board in order to better facilitate the board's work, as well as to ensure there's a strong representation of classroom teachers on the board. Additionally, this bill clarifies the role of the teacher preparation member and expands the criteria for the administrator of a cooperative union to meet the intent of the position while ensuring there are sufficient qualified candidates in the state. The second operational proposal is an increase of the licensing fee from $57 to $85. This amount simply adjusts the current licensing fee for inflation, since it has not changed since 2003. It is important to note that this fee increase does not increase PELSBY's budget. It merely aligns fees collected to the general fund with what is already allocated to PELSBY. The second overarching theme of this bill is to enhance teacher preparation, accountability, and reporting. This bill combines and replaces two separate statutes pertaining to teacher preparation in alignment with PELSBY's efforts to ensure all approved programs, whether they are offered by institutes of higher education or alternative providers, are viewed as legitimate pathways. Previously, these statutes separated traditional teacher preparation and alternative teacher preparation, despite the fact that both should and are now required by administrative rule to meet the same state standards for approval. The second change regarding teacher prep is related to 122.8.091 subdivision 1. That outlines data to be collected on teacher preparation. This bill proposes improving the quality of data collected from prep providers and discontinuing the district report. Current parameters around district reporting provide little in the way of useful data. For instance, districts are currently required to report probationary teachers who are let go and identify where they were prepared. However, teachers are let go for a number of reasons, such as budgetary restrictions and other concerns. These are not necessarily a reflection of the teacher's preparation or their effectiveness. A better source of this information is the survey data collected on all newly inducted teachers by teacher preparation providers in the data summary report. Changes proposed in this bill would strengthen that data by using information reported by districts and program completers through the Common Metrics Survey. This bill also makes the reporting language inclusive of alternative providers. So the next major theme is regarding licensure. This bill includes a number of adjustments to the tiered licensure system that will provide needed flexibility for districts, increase teacher support, and strengthen the quality of teachers in Minnesota classrooms. Many districts have expressed a need for flexibility when it comes to licensing educators in the performing arts and world languages. Under this proposal, these individuals, most of whom would have been considered non-licensed community experts under the old licensure system, would now be able to obtain a tiered license in a comparable way to CTE teachers. This bill also includes a number of provisions intended to help teachers move up the tiered system, such as requiring that Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers receive mentorship and professional development designed to help them obtain a Tier 3 license. With that added support in place, this bill would modify the requirements for a Tier 2 license by removing the option to qualify by graduate credits and testing. Tier 2 would then be for educators who have advanced content expertise, such as those who hold a master's degree, and those enrolled in teacher preparation. There is also specific language in Tier 2 that meets the unique needs of CTE teachers and CTE programs in the state. CTE teachers would be eligible for a Tier 2 license based on 2 years of teaching experience with unlimited renewals. With the additional support and clarifications to Tiers 1 and 2, this bill modifies the requirements for a Tier 3 by removing the option to qualify based on 3 years of experience and allowing those who completed prep out of state to qualify. These changes ensure that anyone who holds a Tier 3 license has demonstrated their ability to meet state standards by completing a portfolio or teacher preparation. Today, you will likely hear from testifiers who will say that allowing teachers to obtain a Tier 3 license without evidencing pedagogical and content knowledge is the only way to increase teachers of color. This is an extremely dangerous narrative that perpetuates the idea that people of color are somehow less capable than their white counterparts. In reality, it is not our ability that is the issue, but rather the structural barriers that prevent us from achievement. Pellsby supports removing those barriers to build a teacher workforce that is not only diverse, but also equitable. You are also likely to hear from testifiers today that their skills and experience should be counted when considering qualifications for a Tier 3 license. To that, we say yes, and yes, you have unique expertise and experiences that make you an expert in your content area. And we want to ensure you have the support and pedagogical training to put those skills to use in serving Minnesota students. If teacher preparation is not the best path, then Pellsby would love to support you through the portfolio process. Unfortunately, many Tier 1 and Tier 2 educators have been dissuaded by the idea that the portfolio is too costly or too difficult a pathway. To address that, Pellsby has initiated a partnership with several educational organizations to better support cohorts of portfolio applicants and help them document their success while they are teaching. This would mean that they would receive guided support while creating their portfolio during the 6 years they are on a Tier 2. They can actually apply after the first 2 years and then become eligible for a Tier 3 license. Additionally, we are working on fee waivers for applicants for whom the cost is a barrier. As I've hopefully made clear, Pellsby is not interested in keeping good teachers out of the classroom. Instead, we are committed to helping those teachers meet state standards and stay in the classroom because we know they are capable of doing so. In addition to the modifications of Tiers 1 and 2, this bill also proposes moving the requirement to pass content and pedagogy exams to Tier 4. This would allow individuals, especially those for whom testing is a barrier, 3 years on a Tier 3 to receive the additional test preparation support from their teacher preparation program, as is required in statute, and their district. These content and pedagogy exams would then replace the requirement to pass the basic skills exam for a Tier 4 license, which we propose eliminating because there is no evidence that skills exams relate to teacher efficacy. Our proposal to remove the basic skills exam is in alignment with HF 217 and the Increased Teachers of Color Act. This proposal would help nearly 40% of Tier 2 holders who have completed teacher preparation but not yet passed their exams obtain a Tier 3 license. The final changes to tier licensure included in this bill are related to licensure renewal. These include developing renewal requirements that are specific to Tier 3 renewal, which, with the changes previously mentioned, would be specifically for first-time teachers. We are also proposing clarity around renewal that ensures all teachers must complete the required cultural competency training and meeting the needs of multilingual learners. The bill includes a number of smaller policy and technical changes, and we would be happy to answer any questions on those items now or at a later date. So let me close my portion by saying, prefacing some of the testimony you are likely to hear today. You may hear from administrator organizations who ask the state to trust in the supports they provide teachers to replace meeting state teaching standards. At the same time, they say that requiring mentorship and adding professional development requirements is a barrier. Pellsby proposes working with these districts to develop the existing supports for Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers in a way that ensures they can move up the tiers and obtain a Tier 3 license. This may mean partnering with their Tier 2 teachers as they complete the portfolio, or it may mean a district becomes an alternative provider that can prepare all of its Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers for Tier 3 licensure. In fact, we are working with the district on that right now. As Representative Frazier stated, this bill is about stabilizing tiered licensure by clarifying pathways and removing unnecessary barriers. This bill keeps the core intent of each tier. Tier 1 remains a license that allows districts to fill an immediate need when it cannot find a higher licensed teacher. However, it clarifies this as an entry point to the profession by putting in place a structure that won't just keep an individual at a Tier 1, but instead move them up the tiers and provide them with the support to stay in the profession. Tier 2 remains a license that allows a district to choose to hire an individual enrolled in teacher preparation, which supports grow your own pathways, residency models, and other alternative preparation models where an individual would like to teach while learning. This bill also keeps this as a license that allows a district to choose to hire an individual who is a content expert, either through CTE qualifications or through a master's degree in their content area. Notably, this bill makes Tier 3 designed for teachers who have met state standards for the profession of teaching, and then includes targeted professional development to support our newest teachers. Finally, Tier 4 remains the license for a trained and experienced teacher. The most notable changes to this pathway is allowing out-of-state teachers who have years of teaching experience to immediately qualify for a Tier 4 license rather than requiring 3 years of teaching at a Tier 3 first. A question was asked at the House Education Policy Committee hearing for this bill. What will this bill fix? And I was only given 20 seconds to answer. So with a little more time today, I'd just like to offer a few, though still not a comprehensive list, of issues with licensure that this bill aims to fix. One, teachers enrolled in preparation outside of Minnesota would be eligible for a Tier 2 license now. Secondly, out-of-state teachers with years of experience can come to Minnesota on a Tier 4 license. Third, 1,000 teachers who have met state standards through teacher preparation but are stuck in a Tier 2 license because of testing will move to a Tier 3. Fourth, Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers will receive the supports they need to move up the tiers. Fifth, Tier 3 teachers will have renewal requirements targeted to new teachers. Sixth, cultural competency training and meeting the needs of multilingual learners will finally become standalone renewal requirements. Seventh, renewal requirements identified in statute will no longer be able to be met by any professional development provided by for-profit companies offering quick and easy renewal hours. Eighth, alternative pathways will not be identified as separate and lesser than traditional teacher preparation. And ninth, districts will not need to spend hours compiling a report that is not a useful measure of teacher preparation programs. Instead, valid and reliable performance assessments, surveys, and other data points will be used to evaluate teacher preparation providers. While all the changes in this bill are on one hand about stabilizing teacher licensure or tiered licensure, this is also a big picture bill. It frames how we see teaching as a profession that requires both the art of connecting with students and the science of knowing how young minds learn, how to assess that learning, how to work with diverse students in diverse settings, and how to turn content knowledge into engaging and effective lessons. It also frames how we understand the purpose of state standards, teacher preparation, and renewal. It frames whether we see teacher development and evaluation as a personnel tool for districts and teachers or as a licensure tool. The vast majority of this bill has nearly universal stakeholder support. And I hope stakeholders testifying today will let you know all the parts of this bill that will increase pathways and strengthen supports for teachers, in particular, out-of-state teachers, Black teachers, Indigenous teachers, and other teachers of color. So I would like to now turn things over to our executive director, Alex Liuzzi, to address some of the concerns raised by testifiers at the House Education Policy Committee hearing for this bill.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Before we go to Alex Liuzzi, I need to correct the record. Earlier, I announced that Representative Mariani had joined the committee. That is not correct. Representative Marquard has joined the committee. And welcome to the committee, Alex Liuzzi. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Alex Leedsey. I'm the Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you. Just a process question, and I'm just something that triggered me from Dr. Bailey, if I could, Madam Chair.
Sure.
So I heard that the testifier, and the reason I interrupted the testifier we're about to hear, is going to do a rebuttal to what happened in policy committee. We're a finance committee. My question is on your latitude. If we're going to handle those policy rebuttals and we're going to hand that, are we then going to be asking policy related questions in finance too? What would be your intent for the committee to be?
Thank you, Representative Krisha. My intent today is to allow all of our identified testifiers to go ahead and proceed with their testimony, and then to allow our members to ask the appropriate questions at the end of the of hearing all of those testifiers. And I think that part of what we're gonna hear today is going to contribute to the overall picture of the bill. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and let Mr. Liuzzi continue with his testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I regretfully was not available to testify during the House Education Policy, but was able to listen into those. So appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak today on the broad bill. It is a large bill with many changes across the entire scope of the work of PELSBY impacting teacher ethics, the board membership, licensure renewal, and yes, tiered licensure. And as Dr. Bailey said, the majority of this bill does have universal support from stakeholders. In no way does this bill dump tiered licensure in the trash, as was suggested in a previous hearing. It strengthens it. It makes the necessary changes any major piece of legislation needs. Everyone, for example, agrees that someone in a North Dakota blind and visually impaired licensure program should have access to a Tier 2 license, which they currently do not. But there are a few areas without full stakeholder support, and the central concern that we have heard is this bill's proposal to close the pathway for an individual to a Tier 3 license after 3 years of experience and not being put on an improvement plan, 3 years experience on a Tier 2 and not being on an improvement plan. The narrative that this forces individuals into expensive teacher preparation programs and does not value experience and effectiveness are false. However, there is a valid concern that we have heard regarding the disproportionate impact this change would have on Tier 2 teachers of color, teachers who have faced systemic and institutionalized barriers in access to higher education and been intentionally removed from the profession of teaching at times in our history. Representative Frazier has thoughtfully worked to craft an amendment offered last Friday that ensures approximately 100 teachers of color on Tier 2 license who are not enrolled in teacher preparation will not face more barriers. But tiered licensure is multifaceted, and it can be easy to believe that this bill impacts someone when it actually does not. Every person who believes that traditional teacher preparation is their only pathway to a Tier 3 license should call PELSBY, call me, and allow us to walk them through their options. We know from experience that information from education stakeholder groups and administrators provided regarding tiered licensure is sometimes inaccurate. After listening to the hearings in the House Education Policy Committee from individuals claiming they will be forced out of teaching if this bill is passed, we think it's important for legislators to understand each of these situations. So one person has completed teacher preparation all the way up to student teaching and has now taught 5 years. The portfolio process would be simple for this individual, as their program likely already met the standards required for the portfolio, and the 5 years of teaching should have the necessary examples of application to replace student teaching. One person mentioned that tests have been an incredible barrier and opposed this bill's provision reducing a Tier 2 renewal from 8 years to 6 years in order for heritage language teachers to have more time to take exams. Actually, this bill removes those exams from a Tier 3 license. Another person mentioned the lack of CTE teacher preparation programs in the state and thus the inability to move to a Tier 3 license. First, that is why this bill has an unlimited Tier 2 renewals for career and technical educators, a license where the teacher does not lose their job every 2 years and the district can rehire them as they would any Tier 3 or Tier 4 teacher. Second, PELSBY has streamlined the portfolio process for CTE teachers so that they can use their work experience or professional certification for their content portfolio. This person, because we as a state believe pedagogy is important when working with students, would need to either evidence meeting the pedagogy standards before moving to a Tier 3 license, or could remain without harm on a Tier 2 license. Another person has a PhD and a Tier 2 license. What this person did not say was that she actually held a Tier 4 license and surrendered it because she wanted to change licensure areas. Adding a licensure field to a Tier 4 license, especially with a PhD in that new field, would be an extremely easy process to the licensure via portfolio, and is the process all Tier 4 teachers undertake to add licensure areas. Another person was on a tier license. This bill requires districts to support that individual to move up the tiers, not currently in legislation. This bill does limit a Tier 1 license to 4 years, but that would be sufficient time for the district to support them to move up tiers, or if there is good cause, they can receive additional renewals of their Tier 1. Another person is enrolled in preparation, so they will automatically move to a Tier 3 when their preparation is complete. Two individuals have completed teacher preparation out of state. So actually the only thing keeping them from a Tier 3 license are the content in the pedagogy test specific to Minnesota. And this bill actually is the answer to their concern. The majority of people who have testified against closing this Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway have completed teacher preparation. The tests are the barrier, not a pathway that requires no preparation. But there is a misconception that 3 years of teaching with no improvement plan also waives the tests. This is inaccurate. For others, the problem is the portfolio process, hearing the narrative that this process is broken. Since the Department of Education has restarted the portfolio process in 2016, and then Pelsby has overseen it since 2017, which includes changes in rule to strengthen the portfolio process, 74% of applicants have been approved for licensure through the licensure via portfolio process, 74%. Is it an easy process? No, but we would argue that it shouldn't be. It is replacing formal, traditional, or alternative preparation. But it also shouldn't be inaccessible, which is why Pelsby offers trainings and supports, and now a cohort model to specifically support teachers of color to work with organizations to guide them through the process together. And we think because the narrative from supporters of removing this pathway, this Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway, cite the licensure via portfolio process as the already available alternative, and because the narrative from those opposed claim that traditional teacher preparation is the only option, we want to spend just a couple minutes to explain the portfolio process for legislators. First, to apply, an individual must have taught for 1 year while in a mentorship program or taught for 2 years without mentorship. This can easily be done on a Tier 1 or a Tier 2 license. Next, the individual needs to submit two portfolios, the standards of effective practice, which are the pedagogy standards, and then a content portfolio. This shows how the individual has learned and applied each of these standards for a professional license. There is no limit on the type of evidence one can use to show how they met these standards, but it is common to be a combination of coursework, professional development, evidence from teaching experience, evaluations, reflections, videos. In fact, one can even use a passing score and a board-approved performance assessment to meet standards. Then a panel of educators reviews the pedagogy portfolio, where the individual can come to that panel and answer questions and defend their portfolio. Two content reviewers review the content portfolio. If standards are deemed not met at these reviews, the reviewers provide specific feedback on what was missing so that individuals can target remaining professional development to meet those unmet standards and resubmit for a second review at no fee. We have heard, speaking of fees, that fees can be a concern. Well, if they are a concern, Pelsby is allowed to waive the portfolio fee based on financial need, or the legislature could choose to waive the fee entirely, or simply for those applying in a shortage area. There are lots of options if the portfolio fee is a concern about individuals meeting the standards of effective practice. If complexity of the portfolio is a concern, Pelsby would gladly accept additional allocation to hire additional portfolio support staff. We currently have funds for one employee to facilitate the portfolio process, with many staff, including myself, spending time outside of our other duties to support organizations in this cohort project that we are piloting. 10 years ago, the portfolio process was confusing and not functioning as hoped, so much so that the Department of Education discontinued it. That is no longer the case. That was 10 years ago. Since Pelsby's existence, the portfolio process has been robust, has been clarified and streamlined, but we are still seeking to overcome that reputation of 10 years ago. Everyone who claims that the only pathway from a Tier 2 to a Tier 3 license is traditional and expensive teacher preparation has not heard of Grow Your Own Pathways residency models, the wide-ranging non-traditional models across the state, or the four alternative pathways currently operating in Minnesota. And if those options are still not accessible, which we know that that could be the case, they should contact us to help guide them through the portfolio process. This is not a one-size-fits-all approach or a one-pathway approach to professional licensure. It is an approach that recognizes that standards for effective practice are essential for quality educators to meet the needs of all our students, and that meeting those standards can come in a million different forms. So at this point, the debate can start to grow a bit abstract, with one side claiming that Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway uses effectiveness as a measure, and the other side claiming that meeting the state standards should be the measure. I believe Representative Frazier already debunked the notion that one supervisor not putting someone on an improvement plan is a demonstration of effectiveness. So let's take one moment to not be abstract about standards. There are 125 standards just in the standards of effective practice. Those cover everything from the ability to establish learning environments, ability to work with diverse students, understand and apply assessment tools, and planning and implementing effective instruction. Here's one of those standards, one of those 125 standards. A teacher must know about the process of second language acquisition and about strategies to support the learning of students whose first language is not English. If we do not remove this Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway, an individual is not required to meet this standard. Districts are not required to provide any support for them to meet that standard. Because a Tier 2 license is bound to a district, that individual may be in a classroom with no exposure to students whose first language is not English, and yet their experience there could lead them to a full Tier 3 license to teach anywhere. Statute also requires much of teacher preparation programs, including requiring candidates are taught scientifically based reading instruction, technology strategies, and meeting the needs of multilingual learners. All of these statutes are made irrelevant if the Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway with only experience remains. If we do not remove this pathway, the state of Minnesota remains the lowest bar in the nation for a professional license, allowing an individual with no training to become a professional teacher. This individual may or may not be taught about scientifically based reading instruction. This individual may or may not know how to support multilingual learners. This individual may or may not understand child development, how to differentiate learning for students at all levels, how to design engaging, culturally relevant lessons, how to assess that learning. This individual may or may not know the standards this state has said are needed for effective practice in the profession of education. If a district is providing those supports that administrative groups indicate they currently provide to their Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers, supports that align to these standards, then these individuals should have no problem completing the licensure via portfolio process using the professional development and experience that evidences meeting these standards. But districts are not teacher preparation providers. Administrative groups have voiced actually opposition to mentorship and support requirements in this bill and other bills and are traditionally opposed to new professional development requirements. All students deserve effective educators in the classroom. It is the mission of Pelsby. This means trained and supported teachers who meet the state standards for effective teaching, which is why this bill, in collaboration with hundreds of stakeholders, strengthens tiered licensure to push teachers up the tiers and ensures only fully prepared teachers receive professional license to teach anywhere in Minnesota. This also means a racially and ethnically diverse teaching workforce. If you support Pelsby's goal to increase teachers of color in Minnesota, support this bill to add approximately 200 teachers removed from the classroom when tiered licensure took effect because they did not have a bachelor's degree. If you support Pelsby's goal to move teachers of color up the tiers instead of being stuck on a Tier 1 or a Tier 2 license, support this bill that requires districts to support their teachers to move up the tiers. Support this bill that would take approximately 250 teachers of color, 250 holding a Tier 2 license with completed teacher preparation and immediately qualify them for a Tier 3 license. If you believe that all students, and particularly students of color in the state, deserve educators that have the necessary training and supports to be effective educators, support this bill. And by the way, support the provisions in House File 217 that, among many things, target funding and supports for teachers of color to become fully trained. We do not believe the state should hope for the best when moving an individual to a Tier 3 license. We believe that statutory and administrative rule standards, the standards of effective practice for the profession, should be met by all teachers before receiving a full professional license in Minnesota. Finally, it was suggested in the House Education Policy Committee that no one asked for these changes, that this is Pillsby's suggestion alone. That is inaccurate. Every single education organization we work with has informed Pillsby of at least one, if not dozens, of changes they seek for tiered licensure. From education groups lamenting the loss of the community expert type permission, from administrators and charter school leaders losing great native language teachers and performing arts teachers when a bachelor's requirement was put in place, from American Sign Language teachers enrolled in an online teacher preparation program in Colorado, unable to access a Tier 2 license. And then countless individuals asking for changes, from out-of-state teachers wondering why they are relegated to a Tier 2 license despite passing tests in their state and having 20 years of experience, to teachers of color in Minnesota who completed teacher preparation programs but are stuck on a Tier 2 license because they are unable to pass the content and pedagogy tests. This bill addresses all these concerns. Additionally, two principals at a conference at the Minnesota Rural Educators Association came up to me separately and said that they will never hire another Tier 1 person, that Tier 1 individual had no understanding of how to work with students and required so much support that their Tier 4 teachers were overwhelmed in supporting them. An administrator in Rochester asked if Pillsby could support them with mentorship for their Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers. Why? Because that administrator had to hire co-teachers with a Tier 4 license to teach with those Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers to support them in classroom management, lesson planning, instruction, and assessment. And just a few weeks ago, an HR representative told me, can we do something to make tiered licensure clearer? I spend half my time hand-holding Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers through the process. Tiered licensure did not fix licensure problems, but it was a step in the right direction. This bill is another step in that direction, simplifying, clarifying, and strengthening tiered licensure. This bill is the product of 3 years of stakeholder feedback directed to Pillsby, combined into a package that keeps the focus on a single mission, the mission of Pillsby, and hopefully the mission of this legislature, ensuring all Minnesota students have quality educators. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Liuzzi. Members, we have two more testifiers that I'm going to hear from, and then we will pause for questions. Representative Krisha, I see your hand is up. Can you wait for two more testifiers?
Actually, it's a process question, so I'd rather ask it now.
Okay, go ahead.
We have two more testifiers, and are those testifiers in support? Is there anybody in the public testifying against this? And the reason I'm asking is, I mean, we're 45 minutes in with 45 minutes left. Do you anticipate more than 15 minutes for questions? I'm just trying to be respectful of your agenda.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much, Representative Krisha. The two testifiers now are in support of the bill. Then we would, my proposal is to break for questions. We have a list of testifiers from the public, and I don't know if they are for or against. But I'd like to move on so we can have as much time for questions.
I understand that, Madam Chair. And so just a question. I mean, if there's those that want to test in opposition to this, I think they should be allowed some time. I mean, we've done a full rebuttal.
Absolutely.
Of. And so I just want to point that out.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Krisha. I think it's our intent here to have a very robust hearing. And it's certainly my intention to hear both for and against. So with that, I'm going to move on. Next up is Sumer Sheikh, Literacy Instructional Coach from the Cloquet Public Schools. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Sansid, and committee members. Thank you for your attention to this matter and listening to my testimony. My name is Sumer Sheikh. I work at Cloquet Public Schools, ISD 94, and I live in Duluth. I'm here to support House File 1376 and view the bill through the lens of equity and responsiveness. I see this bill getting current and potential teachers what they need when they need it. And I think it does a better job of removing barriers while upholding the priority of developing teacher skills. I'm speaking to you today from the perspective of a licensed teacher who moved to Minnesota almost 9 years ago and had to jump through all the hoops of the previous licensure system. It was a major pain, and I had 7 years of classroom teaching experience in two different states prior to arriving here. So I'm glad that there is a new system that's less cumbersome and restrictive and less restrictive. It's better, and it can keep getting better. I'm also speaking from the perspective of a teacher of color living in greater Minnesota, who also instructs equity and inclusion in education, a college-level course, a teacher preparation course at the College of St. Scholastica. This bill is not about closing pathways. In my mind, it's about strengthening pathways and further supporting people in their professional pursuits through quality teacher preparation, mentorship, and professional development. Not only do our educators of color deserve the best paths into the classroom, ultimately, all of our students will benefit from this system. Expanding the bachelor's degree exemption and eliminating pedagogy and content area tests is more equitable and anti-racist. This move also helps meet the needs of future workforce demands. There will be a better path into schools for potential skilled and experienced CTE, world language, and art teachers. In my experiences working closely with district-level CTE leaders, Spanish and Ojibwe language educators, this is the kind of barrier that needs to be removed to get teachers with relevant experiences that will inspire the next generation of trades, medical, technical workers, and develop students with more robust cultural and linguistic awareness. This bill will also allow for increased representation and voices from Greater Minnesota by adding the two members to PELSB. Finally, this bill will increase teachers receiving cultural competency training. And as a facilitator of this component of relicensure, I can't emphasize enough the importance of this part of a teacher's PD experience. I have witnessed growth that would not have normally occurred if this component was not in place. This is direct impacts on teachers being more aware of their own biases and the cultural responsive learning environments that they can create. This is imperative in creating successful learning environments for our students. I strongly urge the committee to keep moving this bill forward and continue to strengthen our licensure system. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next is Courtney Roach, a school counselor from the Bertha Hewitt School District. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Courtney Roach, and I am a school counselor at Bertha Hewitt Public School in Bertha, Minnesota. Bertha is a small town in Todd County. Our school currently has around 500 students, K-12, and the teacher shortage is particularly challenging for greater Minnesota. When a position is posted in the rural schools, we are lucky to get 10 qualified applicants, unlike the cities where they can get over 100 for one position. The needs of schools and students in greater Minnesota, especially rural Minnesota, are very different from those in the Twin Cities. Students in greater Minnesota have to overcome many obstacles to learning, including extreme poverty and lack of access to resources. Todd County specifically is the poorest county in Minnesota. When our students come to school, they need their teachers to be the best prepared and the most caring to meet their needs and close the achievement gap, which is why I support teacher preparation programs. Whether it's classroom management or SEL programs, pedagogy, or curriculum differentiation for students at various levels of learning, these things cannot be learned outside of teacher preparation programs. We need to make sure that teachers have the skills to meet the needs of all of their students. Closing the achievement gap has been the focus of the Education Committee and Department of Education for years. You cannot close the achievement gap if you have teachers that are not prepared to meet the needs of all of their students. Second, we need to support teachers through the tiered licensure. This bill does not remove anyone from the classroom. A tier one teacher can remain at a tier one as long as the district provides professional development opportunities to the teacher. This is a compassionate change to keep more voices in our school while recognizing teachers need support to be successful. More than recruitment, we have a teacher retention issue at the state. Half of licensed teachers are not teaching in the classroom. Lastly, I appreciate how this bill expands the pathway to licensure for CTE, art, and world language teachers. This bill allows teachers in these areas to bring their real-world experiences to the classroom. The rural schools struggle often to fill these areas and are often made to share teachers from other school districts. At Bertha Hewitt, we ran into a situation where we have an art teacher with an elementary teaching degree and an Associate of Arts degree who would not be able to teach a high school art class because of the licensing standards. This bill addresses that issue and and is an incredible relief to our students and our teachers. I strongly support this bill because of the focus on strengthening skills for our teachers, which will benefit our students. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Representative Kresha, we'll take a break right now for some questions, and I see your hand is up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, my hand, I hadn't lowered it, but I'll lower it now. But I would ask the committee to hear from the other side in public. That way we get a full picture before we ask questions. But your committee.
Very good. No, very good. No, that's my full intent to hear. Any other member questions at this time? Okay, seeing none, we're going to continue. Just as a reminder, this is the time that we want to hear public testimony for those who wish to speak either for or against the bill. When this hearing was proposed, the public was provided instructions on how to sign up and testify. We will proceed to hearing from those individuals who have signed up. Each of you will have 2 minutes, so please keep your eye on the chat. And we always reserve 10 minutes for public testimony for each hearing. Ms. Ideal Abdul, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Are you able to hear me? It doesn't look like you can see me, though.
We can hear you. Go ahead and continue. Yeah.
I have no idea what's wrong with my audio. I tell you, I try to be tech savvy. My name is Aida Abdul. I am an autism parent. Mr. Chair, but Madam Chair, I was expecting Mr. Daphne. Many thanks for the opportunity to testify today and to speak for my son and other children like him. As you are all aware, Minnesota has a horrible and shameful education disparity gap. One of the reasons for education gap is teachers not reflecting the students. And I often wonder if my son's teacher reflected him, would the outcome have been different?
Ms. Abdul, we're unable to hear you. If you could keep
you're not able to hear me now either.
Please yes. Get closer to your microphone.
Okay. Is that better?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I apologize. So the current tier system was designed with a bipartisan manner that took everyone's perspectives to ensure equality and equity. Does it need improvement to increase teachers of color? In the words of Minnesota language, you betcha. However, what House File 1376 does is dismantle it. Now, Pell Speak can sugarcoat this all day long, but if it decreases teachers of color like a duck, if it makes hard for teachers who reflect the students to be in the classroom like a duck, then it's a duck. The fact that there have been current teachers, principals, and school administrators united in their opposition to this bill speaks volumes of the damage it will do. I hope our children's education is prioritized, not politicized. I would like to add, Madam Chair and members, that I think it's unfair that the supporters of this bill got an unlimited time to make their case, while those of us who oppose it only get 2 minutes each. I felt democracy was about fairness. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Abdul. Up next, we have Josh Croson from Ed Allies. Please identify yourself and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joshua Cross, and I'm with Ed Allies. Madam Chair, we just heard from Pelsby and the bill author that reverting back to a broken licensure system is somehow progress. I'm here to speak on some of the concerns we have about this bill as amended. To start, only 5% of Minnesota's teachers are teachers of color, but over 20% of our Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers are teachers of color. As Pelsby's executive director, Alex Lutzi, said on December 11th, tiered licensure is having an effect on bringing teachers of color into the profession. Our tiered licensure system is working. It's diversifying our teacher workforce by removing barriers to teaching for economically disadvantaged teachers and our teachers of color. Simply put, this bill undermines our progress. The bill we are considering today includes policies that rebuild those barriers that have kept certain teachers of color and teachers in shortage areas out of the classroom for far too long. First, this bill eliminates 10 of the 12 pathways to a Tier 2 license. There are over 2,300 Tier 2 teachers in Minnesota, and many of them would have their licenses stripped away from them if this bill moves forward. Countless more would be blocked from the profession of teaching altogether. Second, this bill removes the pathway that allows Tier 2 teachers to be promoted to Tier 3 licensure based on their years of experience and teacher effectiveness. Teachers have indicated that they have been planning their lives around achieving Tier 3 licensure as early as this August. and this bill would be pulling the rug from underneath them, moving the goalposts once again. Third, this bill ends unlimited renewals for teachers of color and teachers in shortage areas by name in Tier 1 licensure. And lastly, this bill eliminates a clear timeline when Pellsby must inform teachers and their administrators of licensure decisions. Current law requires Pellsby at least 30 days to provide a recommendation for licensure, and this bill simply just removes that timeline, allowing Pellsby to do some sort of pocket veto in deciding not to license certain teachers, which then makes it difficult or impossible for teachers then to appeal that decision.
Mr. Krasen, please wrap up.
Okay. There's other stuff that was mentioned today, but just to conclude, this bill reverses our efforts, and I would hope for a no vote. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Krasen. Up next is Maggie Borman. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Maggie Borman, and I've been in education for 10 years, all of them teaching and leading at low-income schools across Minneapolis. Today, I'm testifying on behalf of myself, Loy Wobler, and Katie Gros de Avina. We are all former founding members of Pellsby, who helped write the tiered licensure rules, and we want to urge you to vote against this problematic bill. The intent of tiered licensure legislation was to open up more diverse pathways into the classroom, and it's been working. Currently, 21% of teachers of color in Minnesota are on Tier 1 or Tier 2 licenses. And also, many schools use these licenses to fill chronically open positions, like special education. At every Pellsby meeting, we would hear from school leaders how important it was to have these Tier 1 and Tier 2 licenses granted. They would tell us how amazing this candidate was, or how they only had one other applicant, or why the other applicants were not the right fit. They would beg us to approve these licenses. Schools know their context better than we ever could, and they need to have the flexibility to hire who they think will best serve their students. This bill goes directly against this principle. There are a few problematic parts of this bill, but as former Pellsby members, there are two parts that we absolutely oppose. First, limiting the options to obtain a Tier 2 license. The intent of a Tier 2 was to give those who are not enrolled in traditional teacher preparation, but have other important qualifications, a pathway into the classroom. By removing all these coursework options, you eliminate many talented professionals who want to work with kids. And second, removing the Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway for current teachers who have at least 3 years of experience and proven effectiveness. As a Tier 4 teacher myself, some of the best educators I've worked with were Tier 1 or 2. If they've proven they're effective, why would we deny them a permanent license? Removing this pathway will push effective educators out of the profession. Pellsby and much of the Minnesota legislature have affirmed their support for diversifying our teaching force. And looking at recent Pellsby data, Tier 1 and Tier 2 licenses are some of the most immediate and effective strategies that we have to bring in more teachers of color and fill shortage areas.
Please wrap up.
Yes. Including these two harmful changes would erect barriers to recruiting diverse people into teaching and push out many effective teachers who are ready in their classrooms. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Up next is Tanya Allen. Please identify yourself and proceed. I am not hearing from Tanya. If she's on our call, I'm going to move to the next testifier and we will come back to her. Next up is Laura Mogelson. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Can you hear me? Great. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm here on behalf of MACD, the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education. We are supportive of all paths to licensure that require candidates to meet the same standards required by Pellsby, including traditional teacher preparation programs, alternative preparation, two-year transfer pathways, and the licensure by portfolio option. In these paths, candidates are required to provide evidence that they have mastered the same set of standards for pedagogy and content knowledge. So we're supportive of House File 1376, and in particular, the change that has been highlighted so much today, that is the path from Tier 2 to Tier 3 without evidence of being on an improvement plan. So here's the issue simply. Teachers following this route have not gone through any kind of process where there's evidence that they meet the teacher licensure standards set forth by Pellsby. These teachers don't complete the board-approved performance assessment, nor do they have to show evidence of meeting the standards. Yes, their building administrators have evaluated their performance using a personnel evaluation tool, but that tool isn't aligned nor intentionally connected with the licensure standards. So in an attempt to create more access, this specific issue has created a pathway that doesn't have parity. This path from tier two to tier three without an incident is not equivalent to meeting the tier three standards. So the portfolio process is one excellent option for these teachers to earn the tier three license, as well as the other pathways we have available here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Up next is Jose Perez. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jose Perez. I'm a freshman at St. Paul College, a first generation high school graduate, and I am here to oppose House File 1376. School has always been a struggle for me. I was forced to repeat first grade. Reading was especially painful. And up until fourth grade, whenever I was told to take tests, I would bang my head on the desk until they let me out of taking. Teachers would mention I may have dyslexia, but I was never given specific support. And in ninth grade, I failed most of my classes, and I was on track to drop out. Luckily, I found my way to an alternative school, which serves students who struggled in other schools. For me, it was a trip of two and a half hours each way every day, taking two buses, a train, and then a long walk home. I made that sacrifice because I could learn with passionate teachers who built relationships and re-engaged me and so many others in education. One of my most inspiring teachers was Ms. Hobbin. Ms. Hobbin is a Black graduate of Egan High and University of Chicago. She is in her sixth year teaching math. Ms. Hobbin has a tier two license. My experience is why I oppose 1376. This bill will make it harder for outstanding tier one and tier two teachers like Ms. Hobbin to stay in teaching, since tier one and tier two teachers are four times more likely to be of color than other tiers. This means 1376's new barriers will reduce the number of teachers of color in Minnesota. That would be a disaster for students like me, for whom teachers of color are often crucial in helping students of color reach our full potential. Please do not block our teachers who uplifted me and so many other young people from continuing their life-changing work. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Perez. It looks like Ms. Allen had to hop off the call, but she did say that the other public testimony represented what her statements were. So with that, I see Representative Bennett has a question. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a question for Mr. Crossan. Mr. Crossan, just wondering, can you kind of elaborate a little bit? You mentioned how this will hurt tier two teachers, but wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit and how it will hurt, especially maybe our rural schools as well.
Mr. Crossan.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, thank you so much for the question. Absolutely. As I stated in my testimony, 10 of the 12 pathways that teachers currently use for tier two licensure would be eliminated. So any teachers who are currently on those pathways would have their tier two licenses removed. We heard testimony in the policy committee where a teacher, Mr. Holloway, completed his teacher preparation, but was already had 5 years of teaching experience in the classroom and was required to go back and do student teaching, pay for student teaching while taking 3 months off. His tier two license would have transformed into a tier three license after this year, but instead this bill would move him back, taking his tier two license away, possibly giving him a tier one, but he's already indicated that he's no longer, you know, he won't be teaching if his tier two license is taken away. So it'll have ramifications across the state. I will say that tier one licenses are often used for in greater rural Minnesota, but proportion, but Minneapolis and St. Paul have the most tier one and tier two licenses in the state. It's also just important to note, and I think Representative Crescia pointed this out, that this is an education finance hearing. So it's important to note that this provision has no investments in professional development. It does not require schools or districts to provide that mentorship. It doesn't help teachers move up their professional ladders. So I encourage the Finance Committee to dive deeper into the questions that or the claims that the author made of investments in professional development specifically. I think it's also just really clearly too to say that we heard that 1,000 teachers, tier two teachers, would be able to move to a different tier. Well, again, there are 2,300 tier two teachers. So my question is, what would happen to those other 1,300 tier two teachers in this current system? Does that answer your question, Representative Bennett?
Representative Bennett, follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that does. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Very good. Representative Crashaw, you're up next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have my hand up just to do closing comments for our side. So you can everyone else go ahead.
Very good. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to ask Mr. Luisi a couple questions.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Executive Director Luigi, why is it that you feel PELSBY should have more authority to write and create rules? Isn't the legislature the policy maker of all of our agencies' workings?
Mr. Liuzzi.
The role of the legislature and administrative rule, I am not an expert on, but what I do know is that this state has many boards that write rules that help clarify the policies that are put into the legislation. And that's a fairly standard process, understanding that those boards are made up of experts in those fields and can help provide some of that detail. So even with tiered licensure, it required some rulemaking to define some of those pieces for that process piece. The same has been true for teacher preparation providers. It's pretty broad in statute of what is required for teacher preparation providers. So the state relies on experts in the profession to then dig deeper and put some of those details into administrative rule.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but Mr. Luigi, the legislature is an elected body that sets policy. And so I think that you're taking away a prerogative that we've been given by being elected to this legislature and to give direction to our agencies and a board like PELSBY. My next question is, why change the definition of teacher to include permission?
Mr. Liuzzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. We wanted to make sure that we think this is just a technical change because there are two types of permissions used in this state, an innovative program permission and an out-of-field permission. And based on current legislation, we were unclear that individuals who have a Tier 2, Tier 3, Tier 4 license, but on an out-of-field permission would be counted as teachers in other areas of statute. So that was really just to clarify, to make sure that someone who is using a permission to teach is still considered a licensed teacher within all areas of statute.
Representative Erickson, follow up.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Mr. Luisi, I noticed that in this proposal, you codify teacher preparation programs and roll alternative programs into that. So why is it that you are taking authority to define the scope of alternative programs, including qualifications for participation? That seems to be pretty heavy-handed.
Mr. Luzzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, what we did is we took, so there were two separate statutes before. There was the statute for traditional teacher preparation and a statute for alternative teacher preparation. What we have seen in conversations with stakeholders since alternative pathways have been separated from institutes of higher education is that there's the perspective that alternative teacher preparation is lesser, that it does not have to meet the same standards as traditional teacher preparation and thus not as effective. So we went through a 2.5-year rulemaking process to make sure that the standards would align, that all teacher preparation providers, whether alternative or traditional or non-conventional, would all have to meet the same standards. So we took the exact language that was in the alternative teacher preparation statute and just combined it all together to make sure that it was very clear both now in statute and in rule that all types of teacher preparation are meeting the same standards. They just do it in different ways, that one is not lesser than another.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Mr. Luigi, I don't think that's a good move. I think that's a power move. But we'll debate that more extensively on the House floor, I'm sure. I do wonder about whether or not you survey new teachers to find out to what extent they're actually using the standards of effective practice in the classroom. Because every time I talk to new teachers, those who are in their first, second, or third years, and I ask them specifically, because I was on the Board of Teaching when we enacted standards of effectiveness, what standards, have meant to them. And you know something, they don't know. And teachers are decision makers. Teachers make decisions probably 100 times during a lesson. You can't tell me that they're thinking about the standards of effective practice. They're thinking about what they have learned now that they're in the classroom. Because actually, teacher preparation doesn't prepare you for the classroom. It fills you with a lot of stuff, and I hope mostly with content and pedagogy strategies. But most of all, teachers learn by being in the classroom to experience what it is like to have a myriad of different levels of learning needs in front of them or with them, and they have to address all those different needs. So to play up the standards of effectiveness as being the ultimate goal, like for an alternative program, when I think there are ways to provide the training for teachers so that it's a common sense approach is much better. And I'd like Mr. Crossan maybe to comment on what's happened in that regard. Madam Chair, if you would be willing to let me yield to Josh Crossan.
Representative Erickson, I will let you do that. However, I'm going to let Representative Frazier jump in. He's had his hand up, and it looks like he's wanted to kind of comment on this conversation. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I appreciate all of this feedback, but I will say I'm baffled by this. After this very detailed, fact-driven testimony from the executive director and the director, it's like it never happened. And also, it feels like we're asking that we're going to eliminate Tier 1 and Tier 2, that we've identified as absolute pathways that have been helpful with providing access to more teachers of color into the classroom. But like, I'll say this. I've been on the administrative side of this. I worked in the school district for 8 years, working hard with HR, trying to get more teachers of color into the classroom. The portfolio process was a mystery. The teacher licensure process, because you could only get them in if they had a teacher license. We lost tons of highly qualified folks from other states with vast experience to that. This tier licensure process, it does allow people in. That's why we're not asking that we eliminate the openings in Tier 1 and Tier 2. I just wanted to make that point because I feel like everything that was said prior to that has been lost with this adamant argument against. And if we're really about maintaining and keeping teachers of color in the classroom, I just think we have to be really clear about that and focus on that and not make up phantom arguments to fight back against it. Because I'm really questioning who we are really trying to have access to in these classrooms. Is it really quality teachers, effective teachers, and teachers of color? Or is it for a particular industry that want to make sure they maintain a pool that they can keep perpetually, indefinitely in Tier 1 without supports and without training that will make them effective for our kids that need it the most? That is very important to me.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Erickson, do you want to restate your question for Mr. Crossan briefly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted Mr. Crossan to comment on the merging of teacher prep, the traditional teacher prep, and the alternative programs. And that's codified as one piece in this bill.
Very good. Right. Mr. Crossan.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. That's a great question. I think currently the alternative preparation statutes are relatively new. We only have a handful of alternative preparation providers, Lake Country Service Cooperative, Learning Disability Association, et cetera, that have entered into the space in Minnesota. And I think changing policy, merging these policies puts an extra layer of complexity into how to become an alternative preparation provider as we're trying to currently understand the landscape. I think doing this with those preparation providers, with the experts in the field, would be a lot more streamlined. And I think that the current providers that I mentioned earlier just say that this is not necessary, it's not needed, and it makes it more difficult for people to enter the field.
Very good. Representative Frazier, it looks like you have a response.
No, this is not a response to that, but I did want to clarify some stats that were shared earlier just in regards to the percentage of teachers of color that are in the Tier 1.
Madam Chair, I think I had the floor.
I'm sorry, Representative Erickson. I thought you said you just were waiting for his comment. I misunderstood you to be done. We do have a couple other testifiers. If you could be brief, that would be appreciated.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one last question for
Executive
Director Luigi. you know, the fee increases, how much revenue is that going to generate for PELSBY, and why the fee increases now? You know, we're in a critical juncture in our schools, having spent one whole year away from the classroom for the most part. And I think teachers are going to just be overwhelmed, and probably already are, as they've returned to the classroom. So why are we putting this burden on them at this point? And how much revenue will this raise?
Mr. Liuzzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, this will raise absolutely no additional revenue for PELSBY, which was your initial question. For the state, for the general fund, we believe it'll raise an additional $800,000. PELSBY's budget currently is around $2.7 million, and yet we only bring in through licensure fees about $1.8 million. So this increase in the fee is just to align what the legislature already allocates for PELSBY and to close that gap, because right now we're subsidizing the teacher licensure process. This in no way benefits PELSBY. We have just been looking at this for many years, and in fact, Representative Dabney asked a couple years ago if we would consider moving it not funded out of the general fund, but funded out of our fees. So if PELSBY was switch to fund out of our fees, then we would need to increase that fee. But that is the only reason for the change. It hasn't changed in 15 years and would not impact PELSBY's budget at all.
So, Mr. Liuzzi, Representative Joaquin to allow time for other members. Representative Erickson, I will come back to you if there's time. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Sandstead. Really just wanted to say I have not gone through a teacher prep program. I have six teachers in our family, and I know some folks on here have been teachers as well, and I thank you for your years of service. But I know a lot of folks have not been in a teacher prep program for a while either. We do have a brand new teacher in our family, and he has been through a teacher prep program recently. So I really lean on him when I ask him how it went and what needs to be done. And I kind of take a little bit of offense that our teacher prep programs don't prepare our teachers for the classroom. I think they do, and I hope they do. I hope we're not relying on just on-the-job training. I think on-the-job training and teacher time in the classroom go hand in hand. So I just want to throw that out there because I heard that comment, and I wouldn't want to just toss our teachers into the classroom. That would not be good for our students. I just also want to thank Representative Frazier for bringing forward this bill and the work that PELSBY has done over the years to try to streamline the portfolio process, to work on it and make sure it's easier for folks to come in from out of state to get a license here, and that how you have elevated with this bill our alternative teaching programs that have done so much good work in having that other pathway and elevating them to the same status as the traditional ones. I think putting them on the same footing is a very good idea and will help everyone. And when I look back at other things we've done with boards and allowing them to do their work and to fund them to do their work, we always do go back and tweak things as we move along. PELSBY has been in place now for a while, and you have to listen when boards and teachers and other folks are coming forward and saying, hey, you know what, this isn't working as well. Could we tweak here? Could we tweak there? And I know PELSBY has done a very good job working with the stakeholders to look at those answers. And I hope also, too, for the teachers out there that are concerned about changes, that you take PELSBY up on calling them and asking them, what can I do to stay in the classroom? Because they do a very good job at trying to find all those pathways and all those different ways to help mentor people. And that's a big thing about this bill is we want our districts also to mentor folks when they're in the classroom. That is about what we're going to, that is what we're going to be able to retain. Excuse me, haven't had enough coffee today. That is what we're going to be able to do to keep and retain teachers in our classroom, because that's our biggest struggle right now is when you have teachers leaving after 2 to 3 years because they don't feel supported and they don't feel like they're getting the education they need from that on-the-job training, there's something wrong and we have to look at it. So thank you, Representative Frazier, for bringing forward this bill.
Thank you, Representative Joaquin. Representative Frazier, if it's okay, I'm going to let you do closing comments as we wrap up your bill, but we're going to go to Representative Kreisha to give him time to wrap up. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll make sure my camera comes on. And first, I'll acknowledge, Madam Chair, I can tell you've worked very hard to try to make sure everyone gets their feedback in, and that's appreciated, and I want to acknowledge that. So thank you for that. Is Mr. Perez still here?
I do not see him. Oh, yes, I do. Is Mr. Perez, are you still with us?
I am.
Okay.
Representative Kusha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Perez, if you can hang on for 1 second. I was going to make my closing comments. I don't support the bill at this time. I think there's a lot that's just been put out there. But one of the things that I've learned is just because people disagree doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And so rather than me having the last word on our side of why we don't approve, Mr. Perez, I would like you to give one or two statements, if you would, about why we shouldn't support this bill, because I think you're exactly the type of person that I should be hearing from. And you obviously have shown you know as much about this bill as I do. So, Mr. Perez, I'm going to let you close for me.
Mr. Perez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize for not acknowledging as Madam Chair in my testimony. And I appreciate the committee and for everyone's time. And especially to you for giving me this time. I bring up my teacher, Ms. Hobbin, because of her impact on the students, not only in her classroom, but in the building, because she only not only affects the ones that she has to teach, but she also carries a passion that is carried on through the entire school body and is actually unappreciated, and it's not acknowledged as the vital resource that we need. So whenever I think about this bill, I think about the hundreds of Hobbins that affected that our lives. And even if this isn't taking them out of the position, if this is making it harder on them and not recognizing their hard work, I don't know what we're doing. We know that our future of our economy is so different, and we had to prepare our students for the next generation of artists, entrepreneurs, and activists. And restricting our teachers from giving them their full on experience and allowing them to just teach and invest in our next generation, I don't believe that's what we want to do. We want to improve from the 5% of teachers of color we have in Minnesota. So I strongly, strongly believe that this is not the right path. This is not what we want to do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. I appreciate that. Closing comments, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I almost don't want to go because I always encourage our young voices to be the final voices and to be our guiding light. But what I'll say to young Mr. Perez, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And for all of those Ms. Hobbins or Ms. Dobbins, I probably got the name wrong, but reminds me of my Ms. Jeter. She was a guiding light for me. She encouraged me. She was my fourth grade teacher. And anytime I am working with folks to create this type of legislation, I am trying to make sure that I can go back, if I can go back in time to young Cedric and tell him that we're going to do the right thing to make sure you have those people that are going to have this impactful time on your life and make sure you can be effective as a student. I just want to quickly note some statistics that I want to clarify. So I think it was said that 20% of teachers of color are on tier one and tier two. Reality, 72% of teachers of color are actually on tier three and tier four licensures. There are 20% of the tier one and tier two teachers are teachers of color. But in fact, 72% of teachers of color are on tier threes and tier fours. Just want to clear that up because I think that helps with what we're looking at in terms of the numbers and how we're going to be impactful in harming or not harming folks. And this bill is not set out to harm specifically teachers of color. And in fact, the amendment I offer will capture that current 20% teachers of color to ensure they still have the pathway that currently exists now within statute. So I just want to clear that. And I'll just end with this. One of my priorities is making sure we have teachers that reflect our students in the classroom. 99% of the teachers that taught me K through 12 looked like me, understood my experiences. I am better for it. I am prepared for this world in particular for it. I want to make sure every student in Minnesota has that same opportunity. And I will not stop. I will keep fighting for that. And I will keep working with all stakeholders to make sure that happens. But that is where the focus is. That's where the focus needs to stay on effective teachers for our kids, and particularly for our kids that fall within this worst disparity gap in the country, the worst in the country. We still got work to do. Let's keep fighting.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. And with that, Representative Thompson renews his motion to lay House File 1376 as amended over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Members, I do want to thank you, and testifiers, I want to thank you for a very robust and engaging conversation today as we debated this bill. And with that, we stand in recess till approximately 5 p.m. tonight or the call of the chair. Good evening, members. Welcome back from our recess. Just to remind people, remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. The rule has been posted online and is linked in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by the House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to you, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, again, if you're looking for these items in one place, they're attached to the calendar event that Ms. Burt sent out earlier. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface should use their raise your hand function via the app, and Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Members, the agenda Ms. Burt distributed for this evening had a note that we'd approve minutes from earlier today during this evening's hearing. Given that we recessed to the call of the chair earlier today, we'll be approving those minutes from today at a later date, so not tonight. The timed agenda that was distributed for this evening's hearings is meant to provide you with added details around what motions we'll be taking up tonight, when we're hoping to get them, or when we're hoping to get to them for a final vote, and if it also provides you with an idea of how much time we have for each of these sections. We hope that this added level of detail has been helpful. The package on the table tonight that we're discussing is with the intention of moving it to Ways and Means, and it has been discussed at various times this session. In January, the committee reviewed and laid over House File 4. Some of those provisions from that bill will be discussed this evening. A full presentation on the governor's 2021 budget or summer budget package occurred on February 4th, and then another presentation was given on the items during the hearing on February 16th, where we laid over House File 1064. We plan to continue a robust discussion tonight and have allotted time for that, and I wanted to lay out the other hearings we spent on this proposal just to highlight that the items we're discussing aren't new and that the public testimony has already been taken on these items. A bit about the process tonight. It's our intention to move House File 1064 before the committee. We'll be discussing the DE amendment first, but we will refrain from taking any action on it. The introduction and discussion of the DE4 will happen between 5:05 and 5:40, but we may not need all of that time. Then we'll ask the author of the DE5 to officially move the DE5 amendment. We'll discuss that amendment, and we have a time frame of approximately 5:40 to 6:20 for that discussion, after which we'll move on to the final actions with the intention of referring the bill to Ways and Means by 6:30 tonight. We are aware that some of the committee members this evening need to attend other hearings, and we wish to respect that. Are there any questions from members about tonight's process? Okay, I'm not seeing any. With that, Chair or Representative Dabney, welcome to the committee. Would you like to make a motion to move House File 1064 before the committee and to refer the bill to Ways and Means? Chair Dabney, you are muted.
Of course I am. Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1064 to be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Very good. 1064 is now before the committee. I understand, Representative Dabney, that you have a delete everything amendment, the DE4. And as we stated previously, we'll hold off on moving or adopting the DE4 until we've considered all of the amendments. Would you please proceed in describing your DE4?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. This is our summer learning package. I think we all feel a sense of urgency, recognizing that the pandemic has had significant but also significantly differential impacts on learning across the state and within families and classrooms. And so we are proposing in this summer learning package $104.489 million in fiscal year 21, so current year dollars, to meet the immediate needs of students, staff, and schools that were identified by those same teachers, families, and school leaders to help lead our way, to lead our community's way out of this pandemic's impact on education. This proposal includes these key strategies: providing summer programming through community partnerships, providing summer mental health services for both students and staff, addressing declining enrollment in some schools, stabilizing their fiscal situation, ensuring college readiness for recent high school graduates, providing early learning opportunities for young children who may have missed out on pre-K or kindergarten opportunities due to the pandemic. Knowing that mental health concerns have become paramount for both students and staff, we include $7 million for mental health supports. Recognizing that some students were uniquely hard hit by the pandemic, we include funding to extend special education transition services for eligible students who otherwise would be aging out of those services. And we have heard from school districts across the state challenged by sharp student enrollment drops in the pandemic. We recognize that we anticipate that most of those students will be coming back in the fall, but those school districts have some fixed costs that we need to attend to. There's a number of school districts that have been reaching out to all of us, stressing the challenge they face with sharp, sudden, and unpredicted declines in enrollment. Parents are recognizing the power of community and the need for young people to get out and explore again in supervised and safe ways. So we include $27 million in grants for after-school learning, for field trips, and for neighborhood programs to embrace those opportunities for informal learning and for social-emotional growth, including jump-starting full-service community schools for the fall. This is a preschool to career summer learning package that needs to move now. Schools need certainty and budgetary projections to plan from. Families need to know what opportunities will be available to their children to learn and grow this summer. Some of these elements we have introduced as far back as last July, Madam Chair. It's time to act. With that, I would ask, Ms. Pera to help walk us through the bill. Excuse me, through the DE4 amendment. My apologies.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Actually, I think we're going to start with Tim Strom, who will describe Article 1. And if I'm correct, Mr. Strom, continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 1 of the DE4 amendment has to do with declining enrollment. Under current law, a school district is eligible for 28% of the formula allowance for each declining pupil, that is, for each pupil that's not there in one subsequent year. This provision is a one-time only provision in fiscal year 2021, and it pushes that percentage from 28% to 48.5%. That has an aid entitlement cost of $29 million. And there's a printout in your packet that we don't need to go through together unless members have questions later, but that shows district by district, according to the February forecast data, which students or which school districts are losing pupils and what the increase in funding would be for those districts and charter schools based on the increase in the percentage from 28 to 48.5%. That's section one of Article 1, Madam Chair.
Very good. And it looks like Ms. Pera will be taking section two of Article 1. Ms. Pera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Section 2 affects students with disabilities. Subdivision 1 authorizes a school district to provide services required by a student's individualized education program at the student's home and qualifies those services for funding under the special education funding law. Subdivision 2 requires a school district to consider how a student's disability may affect the student's ability to engage in distance instruction when determining whether to refer the student for truancy programs or reporting the student for neglect. Subdivision 3 requires a school district to allow a student participating in a transitions program who missed employment, in-person job training, or independent life skills training during the 2020 to 2021 school year to participate in those programs during the 21-22 school year, even if the student would have aged out, as long as the IEP team determines that participation would be appropriate. And Madam Chair, the rest of Article 1 contains appropriations, and Ms. Adrians will walk through those appropriations later.
Very good. I think Ms. Adrians is actually up to describe Sections 3 and 4. Welcome to the committee, and please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what I can do is walk through the spreadsheet if Ms. Burt has that available to put up on the screen for everybody to look at. And what the spreadsheet will show you is all of the items that are contained in the bill, all of the spending items that are contained. So on the first line, this is the declining enrollment provision that Mr. Strom referred to. It, the cost in fiscal year 21 is just over $26 million. And then there is a cleanup cost. This is the remaining 10% that is paid out to school districts, and that's in fiscal year 22, just under $3 million. Under education excellence, these are all the grants. And I just want to point out that these grants are all one time, and they're all available for use until the end of fiscal year 22. The after-school community learning grants are $5 million in fiscal year 21. Community partnerships are in the bill with $5 million. Field trips and learning opportunities are $10 million. Full service community schools are $2 million. There's a provision for neighborhood programs for $5 million. The summer college for high school graduates provision is $6 million. There are a handful of tutoring programs. So Math Corps is in this D amendment for $3 million. Reading Corps is in the bill for $2 million. And then tutoring services is $3.25 million in the bill. And then the special education provision, this is the transition program that Ms. Pera referred to. The cost for this doesn't show up until fiscal year 23. And in that biennium, it's a cost of a total cost of $24,000. Under health and safety, these are the mental health provisions. There's $1 million for the mental health and well-being supports. And then the school-linked mental health provision is just over $6 million. And this is a program where the money would be transferred to DHS to administer the program. And then for early education, there is $20 million for summer preschool that would serve 4- and 5-year-olds. And then there is a final provision to increase funding for the ABE program at $10 million. And then just for general reference, the governor's recommendation included some recommendations for spending federal funds. And there was a recommendation to spend $57.5 million to expand summer programming. And that's everything, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Adrians. Article 2, Sections 1 and 2, looks like we'll hand that over to Mr. Strom again, and Ms. Adrians and Ms. Pera will help out as necessary. Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 2 has two sections in it. The first is a reporting section and requires that the Commissioner of Education submit a report to the legislature describing all of the various funding sources from the federal government for the pandemic-related purposes. This report would be due by January 14th, 2022, and that would include the two earlier rounds of funding as well as the most recent funding through the American Relief Plan, the ARP plan that just passed the other day. And there's also a reference that they should include in there the amounts that went to non-public schools, child care programs, and other entities that received the funds under the education-related provisions. Section two, Madam Chair, has to do with replacing the state aids that Ms. Adrian's just highlighted. And this provision essentially says that if there are expenditures where the federal funds can be used for the programs listed in Article One, that those federal funds should be used instead. So it lists the Coronavirus State Fiscal Recovery Fund, which is where the first two rounds of funding went, and then the most recent American Rescue Plan Act. So those sources of funding, if they're eligible to be used for any of the purposes listed above, would replace the state appropriations, and instead federal money would be used for those programs. Madam Chair, that's a quick summary of Article 2.
Very good. And again, members, the spreadsheets and the runs are in your packet if you would like to reference those again. Thank you, Chair Davney. I understand that you have testifiers from the Minnesota Department of Education. Deputy Commissioner Mueller, I believe, is up next. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Heather Mueller. I'm the Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Education. And I want to thank you and the members of the committee for the opportunity to testify in support of the proposals in House File 1064 this evening. I first want to acknowledge the difficulties our students and families have encountered this school year and the sacrifices that our students have made due to the pandemic. Our students will be entering the 2021-2022 school year, having had different life and learning experiences throughout the pandemic. This could include not being able to safely engage in in-person learning or activities and struggling with distance learning while they are home, or it may be related to trauma as families struggled financially, feared for their health, or grieved the death of someone close to them. The proposals that we included in House File 1064 reflect the variety of supports our students need from pre-kindergarten through adult learners during the 2021 summer to support academic enrichment and to address not only academic gaps, but also gaps in educational opportunities, and to help them to enter the 2021-2022 school year more prepared and ready to learn. Starting with our youngest learners, House File 1064 supports school readiness in our most underserved 4- and 5-year-old students so that they can attend a star-rated public or private preschool or pre-kindergarten in-person learning program this summer at no cost to them. The pandemic highlighted inequities not only for our pre-K students, but also for our many kindergarten-aged children delaying going to kindergarten due to COVID-19. By providing comprehensive, intensive programming experiences during the summer months, this proposal aims to close the opportunity gap and the academic gap by better preparing early learners to fully participate in kindergarten. Continuing to support House File 1064 ensures that our K-12 students, as well as our adult learners, also have access to robust summer programs. By funding our partnerships with community businesses and organizations to build student and business mentoring and tutor systems and structures, it gives our school-based summer programs the opportunity to bring students and neighborhoods together in community centers, apartment buildings, and parks, and allows for academic programming and mental health supports to be provided in neighborhoods and schools. By promoting and supporting nonprofit organizations that are partnering with districts and charter schools to provide tutoring for students, the funding also provides access to field trips and hands-on learning experiences that give enrichment for our students and exposure to a variety of places like museums, historic sites, natural resources, and other places across Minnesota. The funding also provides access to college courses over the summer and expands adult education opportunities. These opportunities combined with the federal funding to expand summer programs and allow districts and charter schools to make it available to all students will create robust programs at the wealth of experiences and academic support. These summer opportunities will provide access to activities and enrichments during the summer that they may not normally have access to and will help to fill gaps that may have resulted due to the pandemic. Our need to rely on distance learning as a primary form of instructional delivery has put our historically underserved students and their families at a particular disadvantage. Many times, due to the lack of access to devices, internet, and supplementary activities requiring private investment. And House File 1064 helps to ensure that those students receive the support and equal access they need and deserve. While focusing on student academic success is front and center as we emerge from the pandemic, we also need to focus on the social, emotional, and mental health of our students because our students do not come in pieces. Research shows that mental health and academic achievement are linked, and the pandemic itself has caused worry, stress, and grief for our students, families, staff, and communities. House File 1064 provides much-needed expanded access to mental health and well-being supports by putting approximately 125 school support specialists in schools over the summer to provide participants with one-on-one or group mental health supports, access to trauma-informed practices and evidence-based social-emotional learning programming, as well as other activities for well-being like physical activity, mindfulness, and stress-relieving activities during our summer school programs. House File 1064 provides support to our districts and our charter schools by bridging some of the gaps that exist due to the declining enrollment due to the pandemic and reducing financial hardships. Schools have incurred more costs than ever before, and while some of this has been covered by federal funds, fixed costs like those associated with rent or building costs remain unchanged. While we do not know what enrollment will look like in the coming year, we do know that we need to fully support our schools in keeping programming levels constant and robust. We are grateful for the committee's diligence in hearing this bill because it is essential that these proposals are passed by the legislature now. School leaders are currently making decisions about programming, staffing, transportation, and a number of other much needed supports in ensuring that we have access to our students over the summer. Action on this bill is critical for those decisions, and these proposals are critical for our students. As I close, I acknowledge that it is our collective responsibility to support both the academic and the social emotional needs of our students as we move forward. And I'd like to remind the committee that one of those important roles is to helping to provide the federal funds in supporting our students this summer. Those funds, which require the support of the LAC, are essential to expand summer programs. Even as more students move back to in-person learning, many will benefit from the additional access to high-quality, effective, and impactful summer programs. And we ask for your support in ensuring that this can be achieved for our students who are at the forefront of everything that we do. Thank you again for the opportunity to provide comments today and for your support on this bill.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Members, we are running ahead of schedule, so we have a few minutes at least for questions, if there are any right now. We can take those. Okay, I am not seeing. Oh, go back. Hang on. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Erickson, your hand is up. My apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, Representative Davney, how you determine the value of the appropriations for each of these programs. What was your, or maybe the department needs to answer that, because I think this is basically the governor's proposal. So maybe Deputy Commissioner Mueller could answer that. How were these values determined?
Representative Davney or Deputy Commissioner Mueller?
I think I'll throw that to Deputy Commissioner Mueller to start with.
Welcome back, Deputy Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Chair Davney, and thank you, Representative Erickson. So as we were looking at the appropriations that were identified, we were able to look at historical costs based on the number of students who have historically attended, the total costs that it would take to increase a student access and number of students coming into programming, as well as the costs for common teacher contracts and pay over the summer. We also had the opportunity to look back at historical transportation costs. We also reviewed and worked with our school leaders in identifying what costs were for transportation and not only access to get to summer school and home from summer school, but also for funding for field trips. And so we used just our historical costs and measures based on our student counts, as well as the number of teachers to provide that service.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Erickson, some of the other elements that we developed, we did so with stakeholders, for instance, working with Math and Reading Corps. We recognized the value of that individual tutoring at this key point. We then engaged with them on what a robust program serving students would look like and what it might cost. And so worked in several other situations with the stakeholders to help guide our pricing.
Follow-up, Representative Erickson, yes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So either Representative Dabney or Deputy Commissioner Mueller, will grant writers be needed? My districts don't have grant writers, and so I'm wondering, because these are all grants, how will districts achieve all of this application process they need to go through?
I will leave that to either one, whoever wants to respond.
I'll leave that to Deputy Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, and thank you, Representative Erickson. So what we've been able to do is we have worked with the federal funds and the grants and being able to turn things around incredibly quickly with the dissemination of our SR1 and our we've been trying to move forward with our SR2 dollars as well as CRF and GEARS. And so we have been able to create grant processes where it is highlighted with the information that is already needed. It's put into that grant process. We've streamlined our allocations with check boxes, our applications, still get the information that we need and also have follow-up on how we're going to measure success and provide additional reporting not only to our communities but to our legislature. And so we have created and streamlined that process so that we do not require grant writers to be able to do this. We want this to be as easy as for our school districts and school leaders and charter schools as possible and still collect the information that we need.
Representative Erickson, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Deputy Commissioner Mueller, why is so much set aside for the department to use for administering these grants?
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Representative Sanstein and Representative Erickson. So in order for us to be able to do this, not only are we providing the grant funds for what we do for schools throughout the regular school year, it's the addition of, again, we're still utilizing the GEARS dollars. We still are moving forward with the SR1 dollars. We'll be moving forward with the SR2 dollars as well as with the SR3 dollars. And so in each of those are running on three, they will be running on three very different tracks. And we need to be able to build the systems and structures to be able to help to support that. Also, we are maintaining up to 2%, but not all of those funds. And it gives us the opportunity to ensure that not only are we creating a streamlined system and structure, but we are also collecting information and continuing to work to provide support for our school leaders, because I'm having access to these dollars is one thing, but being able to continue to monitor, spend, and provide the information we need for reporting back to the federal government is something that we need to provide our schools with.
Follow up, Representative Erickson.
Yes, one last question. Thank you, Madam Chair and Deputy Commissioner Mueller. Isn't the way these grants, though, are portrayed in this delete all more favorable for metro and our urban districts than our rural districts? It seems to me that across Minnesota, we don't have all of these programs, and so they're going to be advantageous for the metro more than for rural. And that's what my superintendents noted today when I walked them through this.
Deputy Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Representative Sanstein and Representative Erickson. I think that a couple of things. What we looked at is not only in the development of these priorities and programs, it was recognizing not only what we needed to be able to do for diverse districts, but also looking at what we need to be able to provide for our school districts in greater Minnesota. And so although there are some districts that do have some of these programs that are already created, it is also meant to be able to help to support school districts as they are beginning and building these programs, because they would be able to be utilized not only with a federal funding, but being able to not only support this summer, but hopefully into that next summer. It provides continuity in programs. And so it helps to get some of those programs up and running. And we as a department will be able to provide support in that work for them.
Any follow-up, Representative Erickson?
Well, thank you, Madam. I was going to call you Speaker, Madam
Not
Chair.
Yet.
But based on what Deputy Commissioner Mueller just said, if a district were to begin or a charter one of these specialized programs using these dollars, then how do they fund them in the future? Because this is one-time money.
Deputy Commissioner?
Thank you. I appreciate. Thank you, Representative Sandstein and Representative Erickson. So, in addition to being able, these community partnerships and tutorings are examples of our ability to provide geographic equity, and their ability to be able to maintain that is also built into some of the pieces that we have moved forward with outside of the summer programs, but to provide continuity in what we put forward in our policy bill.
Any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious about the last section of the bill. I'm getting there. Dealing with the crossing of federal funds in the night. Maybe the question is for Commissioner Mueller or someone, maybe Mr. Strom. The enactment date is the day following, or the the effectiveness date is the day following final enactment. So I guess, Commissioner, if this is enacted tomorrow, how quickly is the department going to turn around and spend these funds from the general fund and send them to these programs and school districts?
Deputy Commissioner, or we could kick this to Mr. Strom.
Mr. Strom, do you prefer to answer, or shall I?
Madam Chair, perhaps best for the commissioner to ask, since the money that's going out through the department, perhaps the commissioner would have a better sense of the timelines.
Very good. Deputy Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Representative Sandstein, and thank you very much for the question, Representative Drazkowski. What we would be able to do is we have been working to be able to build the grant programs to be able to put those out to our school districts and charter schools as quickly as possible, because we know how important this funding is. And so our ability to turn this around, actually we have built the systems and structures. We are working with other divisions to set up our programs and to push out the applications as quickly as possible, because we know the tight turnaround that our school districts have. And so we have been preparing to be ready as soon as this money becomes available.
A follow-up, Representative Drazkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So, I mean, my concern is, do we even know the extent to the new $4.9 billion is going to get dumped in Minnesota from the federal government, $2.6 billion to state government, and 2.1 or more to local units of government, including schools, I believe. Is that right, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Strom?
Schools get some of the $2.1
billion? Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, yes, there's a fair portion of the federal money that's going to the schools. Most of that money is going to go out in the same manner as the ESSER funds, which are based on the Title I-A counts. There are certain restrictions in the federal law as well. I don't know if I've seen a precise dollar amount. Commissioner Mueller might know the precise dollar amount, or Ms. Adrians might. But a significant portion of the funds, about three-quarters of the education funds, between two-thirds and three-quarters of the education funds coming to Minnesota, are pre-K through 12 funds. The remainder is the higher education share. And there are separate amounts, child care and Head Start are on separate line items.
Thank you. Representative Drazkowski, do you want me to send that over to Deputy Commissioner or Ms. Adrians?
That would be great, Madam Chair. I think it would be good to hear from the Commissioner.
Very good. Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Representative Sandstein, and thank you very much, Representative Drazkowski. So a couple of things. We know there's $1.3 billion that's been allocated to education. We also know that 90% of those funds will be allocated toward our title, based on title. And then the funds have also been allocated a bit differently in identifying that we need to target very specific programmings, some for summer, some for learning loss, and has specific percentages that are set aside for that. We are also looking into what those allowable expenditures are and are continuing to work with the federal government as those are being distributed. There's also $37.7 million for our non-public schools that has been allocated as well.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, members, my concern is, when will we even know how much our school districts are going to be receiving in these federal funds? Will we be able to have runs to show Deputy Commissioner or Mr. Strom, how much our school districts are getting and when they're going to get it? And when will we have those runs?
Deputy Commissioner?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much, Representative Sandstein, and thank you, Representative Drazkowski. So what we know is at this point in time, the funding will need to go to the LAC. We're still waiting on having access to the SR2 dollars. And so we are not able to be able to, are at this point in time, not able to articulate what the timeline is going to be because they are still waiting for the SR2 funds. The SR3 dollars will also need to go through at least a 20-day the 20-day LAC process, and if there are any questions, then they will have to be able to answer those questions and then resume those 20 days. And so it's hard to give a timeline on that because we don't know what the release of those funds is going to look like. In having the opportunity to work with all of you and be able to have this move forward and passed, there's more certainty around that timeline based on our ability to pass this and move this out to districts as quickly as possible. And so that's where it's hard to be able to give some solidified answers in that simply because we aren't sure what's going to happen with the SR2 funds, which have not yet been released, and the SR3 dollars are just moving into the LAC at this point in time.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you. My question, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, you were responding to the dollars around this bill. Is that, I think that's what you were responding to. And certainly we have questions about that. It'd be good to see those runs and know where the money's going with this bill. But what about the money that's going directly, passing go and going directly to the school district from the federal government? Well, we have runs for that $1.3 billion, as Mr. Strom characterized. Will we have runs for that, and when will we know when it's going and what it's used for? And then, I hate to ask a complicated question, but this is a complicated time. But with this bill and that last article of the bill, well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate you having that language in the bill, by the way, but I mean, if the department, cuts the check to the school districts around this, and it sounded like the commissioner's got a great deal of urgency in doing that, and apparently the school districts do as well, even though summer school's a few months away, if that happens quickly within a couple of weeks, it may happen before we know about the eligibility of some of those federal funds that the deputy commissioner was referring to. And we may end up cutting general fund money to the school districts before we know that federal money could be usable for this, according to and in the spirit of Section 2 of Article 2 of the bill.
Madam Chair.
Chair Daphne.
Thank you very much. Just to assure Representative Drazkowski, if you're looking for runs, there is a run showing the distribution of the declining pupil aid that was included in your calendar event for today, and is also, of course, posted on the committee's webpage for the public. So partial answer to your question, sir, but I wanted to make sure you understood that information has already been delivered to committee members. Maybe Mr. Strom, Madam Chair, can help with a possible timeline on some of the other runs that he may be working on.
Mr. Strom, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, as Commissioner Mueller said, the 90% of the new federal funds that are for schools are going to go out on the Title I-A formula. And that distribution should be very similar to the SR2 distribution. I am not 100% certain if the same base year will be used of Title I funding for that. It might be 1 year more current. But the printouts, and we're happy to send you those again, that show the distribution of the SR2 money. The new federal money that was just enacted and is on its way will come on a very similar distribution to districts. So the overall amount will change, but the relative distribution will look like the SR2, the proportionate distribution. One other quick thing to say about this, the way the department is implementing the money is the money does not go directly to the districts. It's actually through an application process so that the department can determine that the conditions of the federal funding are being met. So districts actually, even though it's federal formula driven money, the districts actually apply through the department for their ESSER and GEARS funding. And then that's released once, as the commissioner said, the LAC is still holding on the ESSER II money, but the ESSER I money was released on that basis, with districts filling out the applications and stating the uses. One final thing to add, and I'm sorry to range on a variety of topics. There are certain prohibitions in the new federal act regarding cutting state aid to those that are receiving the Title I-A distributions of the ESSER III money. There aren't prohibitions about moving other money around that, but there are prohibitions against cutting the money to those who are receiving the federal funds.
Representative Drazkowski, we are going to need to move on. Do you have any quick follow-ups, or are you okay?
I'm getting there, Madam Chair, but, my concern is that we don't know. We don't know the total of where all of these federal funds are going. And while I like the spirit of Section 2 and Article 2, we may end up cutting the check and then later find out, we could use those federal funds instead. And whoops, we made a mistake, but we're in a hurry to get the dollars out. I don't know if anyone else shares that concern, but that's a concern I have. I don't know how to get that information. I think maybe proceeding with a little more caution rather than super haste in this might be advisable in order to accommodate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Drazkowski, I just want to, I don't see any of their hands up. I just want to comment quickly that in my conversations with the school districts I represent, and that I've been visiting with over the course of this session, they are in need of money now. They are ready for that. I've listened to my charter schools about some of the hardships that they've faced. I do hear your comment, and I understand that. I do think that if we went to the school districts, that they would be in favor of moving now. And hopefully we can hear some of those timelines coming from the federal government sooner than later. Members, we do need to move on in keeping with our agenda for this evening. Up next, we're going to be discussing the DE5. And Representative Kreisha, I understand that you would like to present this. Would you like to move the DE5 before the committee?
Madam Chair, I would like to move the DE5 before the committee.
Okay, Representative Kreisha has moved the DE5 before the committee. Could you please describe your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to give you a little bit of reassurance, I'll make sure that we stay on time and you won't be rushed at the end. Representative Dabney and I talked earlier, and I must say that I really appreciate the spirit and cooperativeness that we've established in this committee. I haven't found that in all the other committees. So we are here to make this a positive conversation and to offer an alternative to many of the same things that we see. So I'm going to offer the DE5, and the way we're going to do this is I'd like nonpartisan staff to walk through it just as we did the DE4, and then I'll do a quick highlight, and then I'd like to have Representative Damuth and Representative Erickson highlight their areas, then I'll come back with a summary. So to the nonpartisan staff, if Mr. Strom, are you the best one to start with?
Madam Chair, Representative Kreisha, I'd be happy to do so.
Welcome back, Mr. Strom. Thank you very much. Go ahead and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, Section 1 of the DE5 calculates a flat in-person summer school aid amount. It uses the total enrollment in the state and divides that into $75 million to get an allowance, and then awards that money back out to the district charters and cooperatives on the basis of that allowance times their enrollment count. For the 20 school year, which is referenced in there, the enrollment is about 871,000 pupils. I should have calculated ahead of time. And that's an allowance then of about 860 dollars per enrollee. Enrollee is a slightly different measure than we sometimes use, but it's a fixed number that's from the fall enrollment account of students. So essentially for every student enrolled in the school district, charter school, or cooperative unit, there'd be an amount of $860. Subdivision 2 of this provision lays out the purposes You can go through those purposes there starting on line 1.12. I include many of things that have previously been talked about, community partnerships, tutoring services, mental health, et cetera. Section 2 is identical to Article 2, Section 1 of the DE4 amendment regarding the reporting on federal funds. And Section 3, Madam Chair, is the appropriations. This bill has five appropriations in it. For the summer school program, $75 million. School-linked mental health is the same as in the DE4 at $6.011 million. For equity aid, Madam Chair, this is $9 million and essentially would be distributed in inverse proportion to the funding that school districts are and have previously received under the federal CARES Act and other ACT money. So the amounts would go out unevenly based around the amounts that have gone out on the Title I-A basis and sort of wrap around those. Subdivision 5, rather, is on the transportation basis. This uses the same transportation adjustment that was in the bill the committee heard last week, authored by Representative Sandstein, and distributes $2.3 million for summer transportation to those districts that were had a shortfall in their transportation budgets, as identified by the transportation sparsity adjustment. And then finally, Madam Chair and members, Subdivision 6 of the appropriation has $15,017,000 in it for additional early learning scholarships for the summer period. Madam Chair, then the federal funds language is the same as Article 2, Section 2 of the DE4. So, Madam Chair, that's a quick overview of the DE5 amendment.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Strom. Any other comments from fiscal staff, Ms. Adrians or Ms. Para? You're good. Okay. Representative Crisho, who would you like to have next?
Thank you. So thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just do a quick recap of how that presentation, and then I'll hand it over to Representative Damon. So the past year has put our families and students through unprecedented challenges. The scholars will study this for years to come. What worked, what we believe fell short, and where we could have done things differently or what we should have done in our schools. In the meantime, however, we're offering the DE4 in correcting the learning loss and with a goal of more in-person and hands-on learning. As Mr. Strom highlighted, $75 million for summer school aid for school districts, charter schools and cooperative units in per pupil aid based on their fall 2020 enrollment pre-COVID. Summer programs aid could be spent on summer school activities, including summer academies, academic day camps, community partnerships with businesses and organizations for summer mentoring or tutoring, expanding access to tutoring for academic enrichment and learning loss recovery, expanding mental health and well-being supports to students attending summer learning programs, summer field trips, hands-on learning activities, and youth academic programs. I just realized I'm using hand gestures that none of you can see. Summer credit recovery to help students get back on track towards graduation, neighborhood partnerships to bring summer learning programs into the community, enrichment programs for recent graduates, including one-on-one or group mental health supports. The $6 million in school-linked mental health, both sides agree on that. I think there's a lot that we can work on with that foundation and that agreement and expand current services, providing additional outside one-on-one mental health supports. The $9 million for CARES Act, one of the things that I've heard and repeatedly among the superintendents was the large disparities that had occurred with the ESSER funding and how that was distributed. And really, we had no way to fix that. This is a way to make those disparities a bit more smooth and to get the allocation of the federal funds right to the schools. $2.3 million for summer transportation for school districts receiving transportation sparsity. As we all know, in our rural areas, that is, and Madam Chair, you have brought this up, fantastic idea, fully support it, and hoping to bring this in to help make this work better through the schools in all of our very large or transportation sparse districts. And so with that, I would like to yield quickly to Representative Damuth, who really has been spearheading the early childhood piece.
Thank you, Representative Krishat. Just a point of clarification. In your discussion, you said you were moving the DE4. Just to clarify, you do mean the DE5, correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean the DE5, yes. I'll write that in big, bold letters.
Very good. Thank you for that. Representative Dana, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the early learning scholarship portion, as pointed out, was subdivision 6, would be $15 million for early learning scholarships targeted to qualifying 4- and 5-year-olds for the summer learning activities. The commissioner and scholarship administrators would prioritize additional funds to the qualifying children, as I mentioned, ages 4 and 5, for summer learning. A qualifying child would meet the same eligibility requirements for early learning scholarships with these funds targeted to 4- and 5-year-old children. The funds may be used to increase our current scholarship during the summer and award new scholarships to families on a waiting list. And that is what I have for the early learning. And with that, I would be done. And I believe I would yield my time to Representative Erickson. Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Damuth. I'm going to start with Subdivision 7, the federal funds, which directs the Commissioner of Management and Budget to determine whether the expenditures authorized under this section are eligible uses of federal funding received under the Coronavirus State Fiscal Recovery Fund or any other federal funds. It is important that MMB do give us that clarification. Next is the report, which is similar or probably the same as the DE4, and that is a provision that requests a report to the committees of the legislature that have jurisdiction like ours on how federal funds received for COVID-19 for educational purposes were used. And this report must identify all districts, charters, intermediates, cooperatives as defined, you know, in statute, non-public child care programs and other entities that receive the funds, the amounts distributed to the entities, and the purpose for which the funds were distributed. The report must also identify any application or reporting requirements an entity receiving the funds was required to follow. And this report will be due to the legislature January 14th of 2022. Finally, the section that is second in the DE5, the uses of summer programming aid. You will notice that we have used the permissive verb may and then listed a variety of programming that could be available for the funding that we're setting forth in this DE5. Now, in my conversation with my superintendents earlier today, they're very much appreciative of having permissive language, because if you think about it, across the state, the lockdown, including from the time that we began ours in March a year ago, through the end of the school year, and then the beginning of the next school year, were far different across the state. And each of my schools in District 15A and surrounding area and Senate District 15 did operate differently during the lockdown, as well as the start of the school year. And as you know, we even had 26 districts, including charters and one cooperative, that did in-person learning right away in September of this school year. So it is important that they know, that we recognize there is such a great difference about what they might want to do during a summer program. So they expressed a great appreciation for the variety that we provided. We don't have quite as great an achievement gap in rural Minnesota or outstate Minnesota, at least not in our smaller school districts, as we do in the inner city. So, you know, they concentrate on other areas that they want to focus
to help the children, you know, really enjoy themselves again and be able to also experience increases in their learning if there was learning loss. You know, when we think about Minneapolis, we think of a graduation rate of about 86% white children, but our African-American and Latino students dropped to 65%, and our American Indian children to 30%. That's a graduation rate. That's really scary, and one that we really have to focus on differently for that part of our state, because they're an area that really has to focus on increasing the graduation rate as well as a closing the achievement gap and helping their learners catch up, because they had far different experiences from outstate Minnesota. Another thing I want to mention is that in speaking with the superintendents and, of course, with in interacting with my districts during the pandemic, is that the teachers were so engaged. There wasn't one single comment from all my superintendents, and that's about 10 of them, about whether or not their teachers questioned going back to school, mastering distance learning, learning how to do hybrid, or to do a combination thereof, or now to be back in person. Many have been vaccinated. In fact, in some districts, all the teachers have been vaccinated, and that includes other staff as well. In fact, I've had my vaccination as well, because MHealth Fairview has been very active recently in making sure that we who qualify or are eligible are getting vaccinated. So members, the fact that we've made this permissive and that it goes out as pupil funding is very encouraging to our rural districts. We need to look at that achievement gap. There could be a 40-point difference in Minneapolis-St. Paul, and we need to be concerned about that. In the rural areas, we have a little different situation. We want to honor that. So I think with all of that said, I've accomplished what I want to say about the DE5 amendment, and we'll return it to Representative Creation.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Before I go back to Representative Creation, I understand that Tim Strom has a correction, perhaps, or something to take care of. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, so sorry. By a factor of 10, that may be a record for me. The $75 million divided by the 870,000 enrollees should be about $86 per pupil.
Yes.
I said a number 10 times that large, and for that, I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Thank you very much. Representative Creation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I promise to be respectful of time, so 6:15 is when we wanted to vote on this. What I would ask, we have a little bit of time. I'm wondering if Commissioner Mueller could just give us her reaction. I'd like to see what feedback she has on this, because I think we have alternative viewpoints here or alternative solutions, and certainly want to see what the department's take on that would be.
Deputy Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you very much, Representative Sandsteed, and thank you very much, Representative Creation. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you bringing forward an amendment. What I know is, and I've said this before, that I think that the reason all people serve on this committee is because we first and foremost put students at the center, and we're all trying to think of ways for us to be able to help to support our students, our families, and our communities the very best we can. And I think that there are places where we certainly have points of agreement. And so our ability to be able to help to support not only our students in greater Minnesota and recognize and are cognizant of the differences is something that we know is important. We also know that while it's true a graduation disparities may look different in our in greater Minnesota than they do in our metropolitan areas, but we also know that we do have gaps in both graduation rates as well as in our academic data. And so the funding, the way that we've thought about the funding is really to help to support historically underserved students, as well as to look at utilizing our title dollars. And that was part of the expectation around the federal funds. And so being able to be able to also help to support that is something that we've identified. And so I think that there are places where we find commonalities for sure. And we recognize that there are places where I think that we are identifying these dollars based on historically underserved, but do know the differences between what we have in greater Minnesota as what we have, as well as what we need in the metro area.
Representative Kreisha, any follow-up?
No, thank you, Representative Mueller. And then I can just move to my final remarks and
Representative Kreisha, we do have other questions if we could take those at this time.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Representative Thompson.
I was putting the hard sign up and then my hand went up. But I can make a quick comment. I hear, and I've heard that word every committee I've been in today, equity lens. And it's like the new buzzword around this doggone building, equity. When people aren't showing equity in some of the decisions, some of the words that come out of these their mouths, equity is just a word that sounds good. I'll say this because I heard also this week, our side. Who's on the kids' side? Because we don't have a side. Who's on their side? This is my side and this is ours. We make decisions for children and their education. Not my side, not this side, but the kids, we need to have this side. This is the last piece. It's just a quick, these are just comments, I'm sorry. When you talk about disparities in achievement gaps, right? Like these things didn't just happen this year. They've been happening under the watch of some of these people who talk about their side and this side and these gaps. And these are some of the decision makers on how these dollars are being spent. That's where the achievement gap happened at, under your watch. So, I mean, I'm trying to figure out like what side are you on? Either the children's side or you have your own agenda. When it comes to spending, lo and behold, you try to target money for people who need it. Then they start calling you racist. And that's the most craziest thing I've ever heard. African-American children are struggling in this education system. That's a fact. And to target money to that demographic of people is not racist. Lo and behold, you help the African community, African-American community out. What is going to hurt? Because we haven't been helping African-American kids out. That's why we're at the top when it comes to achievement gap. We haven't been investing funds in the African-American community, in the African-American teachers and administrators. Hey, we don't even have African-American lunch ladies. Because the money comes here and then it goes out to all these places except my community, except our community. And when I say something about it, then they call me racist. John's speaking up for one group. Well, if you can look at this screen and look at the color of my skin, I've been nothing but this skin color all my life. And I've been here. My parents have been here. Their grandparents have been here asking for the same thing I'm asking for right now, investments in our community. The underinvestments is the reason why we're here. This is the reason why we're here right now talking about an achievement gap that we've been talking about as long as I've been on this earth. I know that my ancestors were beat for learning. I'm going to keep pumping that. They were beat, strung up by a tree if they got caught reading a book. Now we call it an achievement gap. That's the new string up by the beating. Is this under investing in these doggone teachers of color. And every time we speak on teachers of color or African-Americans, then you get these people who raise their hand and say, let's have a conversation about that because I don't think that what you think is not working. So how about we scrap all of your ideas and go with some new innovative ideas that will work in my community, and I'll yield my time.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Kreisha, let's go on to Representative Joachim, and I will come back to you. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to thank the community today for entertaining summer school funds. Thank you, Chair Dabney, for bringing it forward. It really is important to have our schools ready to help kids with the learning loss they may have faced. Just want to remind folks, though, that COVID really hit families and children across the state differently. And my concern with this amendment is that by doing a flat formula of $86 per student, we're not really targeting to maybe the students that truly need it to address the learning loss. And that does look different everywhere. So I prefer the more targeted method. And then I have a little concern too, and I don't know if this would be in the form of a question. I really do appreciate early learning scholarships, but I also appreciate Pathway 2. I like the braided approach. And
The problem with using the mechanism of early learning scholarships with this for summer school, from what I understand, students who turned 5 as of September 1st, 2020 would not qualify for this. So then we're looking at a group of kids that a lot of them have been held back from kindergarten because parents were worried with COVID. And now they're not going to be able to tap into those summer school dollars to move forward and help with that learning loss. Plus, the scholarships are an added layer of complication for parents to get through before summer school hits. Plus, it's tougher for programs that are delivering the services to move ahead trying to guess how many kids that will qualify for, whether, you know, we're in a crunch here. We want to get this done. We want to get kids into summer school. And for a program to get off the ground, they have to know what their set dollars are and not just wait to see who applies. So that's a concern with summer school using that mechanism. And I don't know if anybody wants to respond to that. If MDE, we'd kind of like to hear what their thoughts were on it. Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner Mueller. Or I'm sorry. Either or MDE, if somebody else wants to comment. Representative Joachim, no. Oh, maybe. Deputy Commissioner, would you like to respond?
Sorry, I was having some trouble getting off of the mute and the video. So I really appreciate the question. Thank you very much, Representative Sandstein, and thank you very much, Representative Joachim. I want to make sure that I'm answering the question fully. Could you repeat your question one more time, please?
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Mueller. My concern with using early learning scholarships for a summer school program is that it's one added layer of complication. Two, students that turned 5 as of September 1st, 2020 would not qualify. And three, just having the districts not knowing what that funding is going to be to set up their programs as quickly.
Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Sandstein and Joachim. The summer preschool proposal really captures children who may not be served through our early learning scholarships. It's children who are age 5 as of September 1st, 2020 and are not eligible for those scholarships. Thus, it would really take effect, make one of the intended cohort age groups ineligible. And so since the current scholarship waitlist only includes children through age 4, changing this $20 million in funding to be administered as early learning scholarships, diverse and unknown amount, away from the intent of the proposal. And while the priority for eligibility is low-income children with similar priorities as early learning scholarships, this proposal captures a wider population for a prioritization, including children who are tribally enrolled and children receiving supports and services, such as those who identified through early childhood screening and or early childhood special education services.
Follow-up, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was one of my concerns. I mean, we really are talking about getting kids prepared that might have, should have maybe been in school already this fall where parents decide to hold them back and making sure our learners are ready to go. And I wouldn't want to add any more complications or leave folks out. As I said before, COVID has affected students across and families across the state completely differently. And I think having a blanket formula might give districts, not that all districts don't need money some way, shape, or form, but when it comes to summer school, might be giving districts money for summer school that they may or may not need.
Okay, any response to that? Very good. Representative Krisha, I know I told you.
I believe, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, Representative Demuth had her hand up.
She does have her hand up. I did tell Representative Krisha I would come back because I think he wanted to respond before I went to you. And then I will come to Representative Damuth. So Representative Krisha.
Madam Chair, you can, if you'd like, you can let Representative Damuth and then I'll finish closing.
Very good. Representative Damuth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With the early learning scholarships, I think it's really important to point out that we have had bipartisan agreement about the early learning scholarships, that they do provide access to high quality programs targeted to those children that are most in need and that have most likely been impacted by the pandemic restrictions. As far as the waiting list, we know that there are 2,800 children on the waiting list for scholarships. The figure would probably grow as word of available dollars reaches out through the administrators, but I think that's something to keep in mind, that we know it's high quality, it does reach those children, and it helps with the waiting list. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do appreciate the early learning scholarships. I've supported them in the past. My concern is the gap of the five-year-olds that would be left out if we distribute this money this way. So I'm sure that's something we can talk about as we go forward.
Representative Damuth, any follow-up on that?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Very good. Okay, Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So a couple of responding remarks. So first to go with Representative Thompson, I appreciate the comments. And I highlight that you had mentioned sides. I agree we don't need to take sides. You're welcome to vote for this and join the supporters of this bill as well. I know you just threw out there that all of the ideas should just be thrown out. I disagree with that. I think there's a number of ideas in here that actually we both agree on. In fact, are in both bills or in the governor's bills. Number one, I would highlight the opportunity scholarship, which for many, many people have seen the effects of how that hit some of our most difficult populations of students and families, and is very targeted towards lifting them those families up specifically, and had great support from many, many, many of the communities that you're familiar with in the metro area. In fact, St. Paul has given great support to that. I've had great testifiers for that. The other thing that I would note out is in your comments, you were just broadly brushing things aside. I wish that you would be a little bit more targeted with your policies rather than just throwing broad comments out there. We're really trying hard to put an alternative together, an alternative policy that's what's being presented. I think we have two good proposals here. In fact, Commissioner Mueller pointed to some of the things that are of value on here and some of the things that she would probably like to change, but I suspect that exists with both of these amendments. In fact, Representative Joachim mentioned that this may have hit communities differently. It is, but we don't know what that is. I can tell you, if you come to some of the smaller districts that I've talked to, districts where superintendents are school bus drivers as well as part-time superintendents, they don't have grant writers. They don't have abilities to simply find the paperwork or manage the bureaucracy. So it looks like we're going to have bureaucracy across the board. If you're going to argue that opportunity scholarships create more bureaucracy, I'm going to argue that by holding money back for the department and creating more grant-based programs is going to hurt other schools disproportionately. So what we're trying to offer here is we know that COVID has affected every single kid, every county, every teacher, every school district across Minnesota. The ESSER funds were disproportionately sent out. We've heard that time and time again. In fact, there was a lot of districts just miles apart from each other that had huge disproportions when the impacts were the same. So we're trying to reverse that. We're just trying to recognize that every school district needs the flexibility. They need the dollars. We need to get them to them as best we can so that they can manage the crisis at their own level, their own community levels. I've heard this in this community many times. Just because you're not familiar with what may happen in other districts around the state doesn't mean the problem is not evident or doesn't exist. It exists across the board, and our alternative is just trying to address that in a way that we feel covers that proportionate distribution. So with that, Madam Chair, I did want to be respectful. I would ask for a roll call, and I want to make sure that we hit your time to come back to the DE4. Unless, of course, you want to adopt ours, and we can move on.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. And with that, Representative Kreisha renews his motion to adopt the DE5. Is there any discussion on the DE5 motion? Hearing none. Ms. Sunderland, will you take the roll? Representative
Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Always respectful and thoughtful discussion. I do appreciate that. Members, I do ask for a no vote, however, on the DE5. There's a number of reasons. The sharp contrast, I think, with the DE4 is that the DE4 was developed with the input and engagement of stakeholders, listening to families, listening to teachers, listening to school leaders across the state, on what they identified they needed in their districts. The declining enrollment aid, this summer learning package is a statewide package. The declining enrollment aid, for instance, goes more than 50% of it to greater Minnesota school districts. So we made sure that the distribution was fair. The early childhood language, I think it's a mistake to leave five-year-olds on the curb just before they go to kindergarten, as the DE5 does. And I think it's important for committee members to know that the language included in the DE4 was reported out of the early childhood committee this morning. So the folks with jurisdiction over the early learning scholarships and a real keen eye on early learning reported this language in the DE4 out. As for the private school voucher proposal, we know that that's an ideological proposal. It's not an educational value. We know nationally that private school vouchers largely go to families that are already choosing private education. While I certainly affirm people's choice to choose private education, I do not affirm the use of public funds in ways that are unaccountable and that in schools that don't agree to not discriminate against students. We've had this discussion in past years with the legislature. And we also know that students in some studies who choose private school vouchers fall as much as 3 years behind in their math scores when they make that change to the private school. I think right now the urgency is on summer learning. We need to focus in on that. We need to deliver the resources and the certainty to school districts that they need. So, members, I ask for a no vote on the DE5. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Ms. Sunderland, will you please take the roll?
Chair Dabney.
No.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
No.
Representative Kreisha.
Aye.
Representative Bennett.
Aye.
Representative Daniels.
Aye.
Representative Damuth.
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Representative Erickson. Aye. Representative Feist.
No.
Representative Jordan.
No.
Representative Marquardt.
No.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson. Representative Thompson.
Thompson votes no.
Representative Wolgamott.
No.
Representative Zhang.
No.
And Representative Joachim.
No.
The vote yields 7 ayes and 9 noes.
Did we hear Representative Erickson's vote? I apologize. I did not.
I did hear her vote aye. She can vouch for herself.
Voted aye.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Hearing 9 nays and 7 yeses, the motion does not prevail. The amendment, the DE5, is not adopted. Chair Dabney, would you like to move the DE4 before the committee for adoption?
I would, please, Madam Chair, and move the DE4.
Very good. Members, this will be our second to last action before we make our final motion on this bill. Having already discussed the DE4, Chair Dabney, do you have any closing comments regarding the DE4?
No, Madam Chair. I believe I addressed the DE4 in my comments on the DE5 simultaneously.
Very good. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. And I would just like to thank Madam Chair and also thank Chair Dabney for the time to present both sides. I, of course, would recommend a no vote on this. I think we're going to have plenty of time to work through these, and we'll see what comes over from the other body. and we'll see this in the House floor. But at this time, I would recommend a no vote, and perhaps we can get to some agreement on some of the other issues. Thank you for the robust discussion.
Thank you, Representative Krishan. And with that, Representative Dabney renews his motion to adopt the DE4. Ms. Sunderland, will you take the roll, please?
Chair Dabney.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sandston.
Aye.
Representative Krishan.
No.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Daniels.
No.
Representative Damath.
No.
Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Jordan.
Aye.
Representative Marquardt.
Aye.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Representative Richardson. Representative Thompson.
Thompson votes yes.
Representative Wolgamott.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
And Representative Joachim.
Aye.
The vote yields 9 ayes and 7 noes.
Very good. Hearing 9 ayes and 7 noes, the DE4 amendment is adopted. House File 1064, as amended, is now before the committee. And the motion that we are considering is to refer House File 1064 as amended to Ways and Means. Is there any final discussion on House File 1064 as amended to this motion? Representative Krisha, any comments?
I promised to make sure we got out on time, so we can go to a vote.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Dabney, any final statements?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner, for being here tonight. I ask for member support.
Very good. And with that, Representative Dabney renews his motion to refer House File 1064 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. Ms. Sunderland, please take the roll.
Chair Dabney.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sandston.
Aye.
Representative Krisha.
No.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Daniels.
No.
Representative Damath.
No.
Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Jordan.
Aye.
Representative Marquardt.
Aye.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Representative Richardson, I've been told, is in a transportation hearing. Representative Thompson.
Thompson votes yes.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Joachim.
Aye.
The vote yields 9 ayes and 7 noes.
With 9 ayes and 7 noes, the motion prevails, and House File 1064, as amended, is on its way to Ways and Means. Members, I want to thank you for a very robust conversation tonight and for your time. And with that, this committee is adjourned.